Okay, welcome to our official start of the meeting. We now have the conference call engaged. We'll go around the room here and introduce each other. Dirk Clayson, President. Dave, you're
Dave,
next.
Dave Turley.
Brent Fulmer, Esquire.
Paul Brayton.
Nancy Brayton.
Shauna Cox.
Dale Clarkson.
Jordy Akers, about 128.
I don't know. Bob Allen.
We get everybody? Okay, welcome to the meeting. Second item was approval of the meeting minutes, which we did based on the internet, and I think they've already been posted. So is everybody acceptable with that form? Yes? I'd entertain a motion then to officially approve the meeting minutes as posted on the internet.
I'll make the motion.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Financial reports. Here's the profit and loss for last year. And some of those back that way. We went over a lot of this in detail in the last meeting, so I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on it. But the year has been finished up. The invoices have been sent out for the new dues. Probably worth mentioning is that last year, when you look at our income versus expenses, we were negative $21,000. And we did some extra spending on some projects and stuff because we had money in the bank account, and we currently have enough. Hello?
You're on.
Is that Linda? Hello on speakerphone. So, in any case, we had a short addition on the speakerphone, I think is Linda. So, currently, here's a balance sheet. We'll just kind of look at our cash accounts on the top. Four line items. We have $21,000 in cash in our bank account, which is primarily from dues received so far from the recent invoices sent out. So we're... Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear us?
So are there any questions on the financials or anything that anybody would like to discuss in regard to that? Niall, we've kind of strategized with Niall doing taxes for next year. The assessments as they're coming in are being coded so much to capital, so much to dues on a 60-40 split. And so that should allow us to have some pretty good tax treatment for capital expenditures this year. So I think that's a strategy that we've implemented, and we have started receiving the funds in that method. So,
Dirk, on that first P&L, does that mean that there was a $21,000 loss?
Yes.
Over the budget, but there's still money.
Well,
in the bank.
Not necessarily in just the actual. There is still money in the bank, but there was $21,000 more spent than came in during that calendar year. Some of that actually may be because, just like this year, I asked Linda, for example, if we bill at the 1st of December and somebody pays us on December 20th, historically we would have showed that as a receivable in the previous year. And so now we did change the QuickBooks to at least register everything as of January 1st, so we'll get a report. And in the notes, she's putting a comment, you know, check came in December 20th, but it will show up in the P&L. So I would say probably half of this $21,000 is just an accounting issue with receivables coming in 2008 rather than 2009. And the other half of it is that we probably left the end of this year with less money in the coffer than we did the previous year.
I think it was November or December. There was still a considerable amount in the bank still.
Yeah. So we've never been close to being at any issue with funds available in the bank. However, that's just a piece of data to note that we pretty well spent everything that came in last year and maybe then. So, Niall?
Derek, what's represented in this cash receivable balance?
I would look at the first four line items on this balance sheet, and the rest of them are all probably things that need heavy accounting review. So it just kind of, we're reconciling the checking accounts and so forth, but depreciation of assets and all those kind of things all need
I don't know why it's not working. We can hear you.
Review.
Did we have to push something out?
Okie dokie.
Five star? What? Five star is recording. So do we need to record it?
Yeah, we should.
So that $21,000 doesn't reflect on any of our
spending.
No, it's mostly extra projects that we did that we said, hey, we've got some money to do. The metal restoration, head gate up at Red Reservoir, some of those things that we said, hey, let's try to get these done. And expense some of this out before the end of the year.
Goodbye.
So I think a pretty good job was done this year. I feel maybe better than a lot of years in terms of money going towards projects rather than propane bills. So I think that that's something that we've made some good improvements on, and I think that reflects significantly in the 2010 budget as well and what we hope to achieve. Any other discussion on financials?
She wants me to do it over. She says she cannot get in. It says not letting her in. Says
it well, it let her in because we heard her here twice. So.
But are we still online?
I'm not sure we want to disrupt the... Well, I don't know. If you want to, that's okay. I guess we've got the handheld recorders that are recording the meeting. So I vote that we find a way to not have this be 50% of the cause of a dilapidated meeting every month, that we can't seem to operate this recording machine.
That other speaker worked great. I don't know whatever happened to it.
Well, it's never worked once in the last two two meetings, right. And so Linda sent it back to have Vance take a look at it. I'm not sure anything's wrong with it, right. As opposed to that nobody knows how to use
operator
it.
Operator error.
So, but somehow we need to do enough test calls or something to get beyond that. So, okay, next item. Update on water issues, Ben.
There's a lot of water issues. The temporary ones is Paul is finding out that water comes in two forms, liquid and solid. And we've had more solid than liquid this week. But, you know, on those temporary things, I think Paul's got things put back together and water flowing for now. And I've learned a lot of things as far as trying to prevent it again. And some of them we're going to limp through until springtime, rebuilding the lower system, revamping the 40,000-gallon tank and getting that stuff done where it'll be fixed for the future. And we've got some good plans on that and some things we still need to talk about on site. that's been most of the main things. And I don't know if we want to discuss a lot. Davey, I know you've done some work stuff on 40,000-gallon tank, you know, more of a bladder liner and stuff. You know, how much we want to discuss any of that today, or if you have any update.
It's been hit and miss really quickly. We can have one built out of Colorado and shipped, and it's $6,000. I was really clear that it was for potable water, and then he said, oh, you wanted that for a drinking water system. Oh, well, and then he sent me a different price, but I was really clear to begin with, and it needs to be inside the tank. It needs to be...
Does it come in pieces?
No, it's one piece. And that was the reason why I asked about the opening. And he said it shouldn't be a problem at all to get it in.
The 24 by 24?
Yeah. So that was the one issue. Then the other one was for $2,000, I can buy the material, but people are all over the place, so I haven't been able to nail that down. Because it's the same material we use on roofs, but because it's potable, then it has to be reinforced, and then they're back and forth on that. So the only thing I can nail down for sure is it might be about $7,000 for approved water bladder.
Well, again, that's ongoing. We're still not there, you know, next couple of months before springtime. I think the decision timeline still is late April, early May, to revamp the lower system. The things we've got to do, Paul's turned in a list of valves, pressure release, things to change. They've temporarily, or, you know, to get things open again, replace some of these valves we've discussed, going back and even what we budget, replace some of those that are plastic ball valves with more of a long-term steel gate valve, getting the drain, stopping waste and drains on each cabin in the lower end so that they can be independently winterized in a quick fashion, and hauling and banking dirt up around the 40,000-gallon tank to keep the temperature up on it, which I think will solve the freezing issue. You know, I think it's a pretty simple fix that way. So a matter of scheduling the few days, the manpower, some equipment to go in and do that, I think we're all in agreement, and we put in that in the budget. We have in the budget to, however, to handle the 40,000-gallon tank. Paul says he does have some additional photos that I haven't seen of the inside of the tank in some of those areas that's going to help us to know, can we do patch thing or sandblast and redo the whole thing or use this bladder. That's, I think, the only thing that's undetermined, what's going to be best long-term and what's going to be the most economical long-term. So we'll keep working on that. Paul and I are going to go over on-site a little bit. He's drawn some of these diagrams. There's some of the areas that I haven't seen personally recent enough to know valves and having some options to shut some things off and, again, get some pressure reliefs and stuff in there so that we're not blowing things apart. That's the main thing on that, the lower water system. And as we get closer, there's got to be some minor upgrades in the upper system to keep it a little less as far as contamination and stuff. Other than that, there's a notice that some had seen and stuff on some water rights, and I know you had sent your email on some as far as the address and recommendations and stuff that we haven't addressed. Were you to the last meeting that I was not to?
Yes.
You were.
Yes.
I was on the minute. So, and you and I haven't talked since then to know what suggestions or, you know, making a plan to go through as far as being a little more proactive in getting that. But, again, part of it's been we've spent so much time just handling these day-to-day, week-to-week crises that we haven't, you know, gotten into that.
So, Ben, on item A here, are we all done with that? Follow-up tests for culinary system?
We are.
Back
and
on track,
back approved
nothing
and
more
everything
we need to do. So,
one thing that we, and you and I didn't talk about it, we had discussed a little bit, and we may, and looked at this. I put down
the certified operator.
Okay, follow-up test, we're good on that. Leaf spring development.
We need to start with the...
So the follow-up tests are done. Leaf spring development. Well, let's talk about that now.
Okay. The project, as you know, would be on hold until there's nothing to do now. But I did want to let you guys know I sent out this questionnaire to the 20 members of Broad Hollow, received responses from 8, and here was the results of that. Just to let everybody know, like, where they're all standing with it, because besides us 4 that mainly wanted the water at first place, nobody else would care. And that's where that boils down to. So as far as,
Did you send this out sometime recently?
Sent out in October.
I didn't receive one.
I took the list from the database.
I've only had it for a year.
Oh, that's 2 years.
I think it was 2 years.
So you can see that out of the 8 people that responded, 2 of them already have water, 1 has a well, 1 hauls. Do they have any current interest to have water at the lot? 3 out of 8 had current, and that was us, the 3, and then Barbara, Dawes, and Murphy would be together in the 1. Do they foresee wanting any water on their property during the 1 to 5 years? 2 were interested. And 1 was interested in 11 to 15 years, maybe having water. And 1 of them gave no time, just, you know, whenever. And in number 5, would they prefer, if they did want to have water for a lot, how would they prefer having it? 1 was more interested in drilling their own well, and 4 were interested in developing the water system at leaf springs. And then number 6, did anybody else on Broad Hollow have any objections to people pursuing the water at leaf springs, and none had any? And then would anybody be interested in helping us do that project? And 3 out of the 8 would not be interested. No, 3 of the 8. Sorry, typo. 3 of the 8 would be interested in helping with that. And that's about where that
is. Yeah, sorry.
So that's basically, you know, nobody's water rights, I brought this up in the email to Ben. Again, the need for a water committee. We've got over 47 permits, water permits, filed under Deer Springs Ranch. 1 has the correct address. So here's a list of that. I can start working on that immediately, get that up to date. But I think we really, really need to start thinking about. I'll leave you guys with that.
I saw that one.
So that at least we get the mailings and keep that stuff updated. Have a water committee to do that, and also maintain the projects like that that we're going to start working on, looking at stuff. Situation like communication mishaps and stuff that happened before don't reoccur, and have a water committee to ensure that that doesn't happen.
So are you recommending online to update these to DSROA, P.O. Box 254, Kanab, Utah?
I don't think you can do it online. It has to be a written letter and then signed by a member of the board.
Okay.
So if you want me to do the paperwork, just
let's do that. Any objections on that? I had recently done it because I wondered how they handle it. Online, I think, and what I did, and this was just a few months ago, part of it was a different water right, independent from Deer Springs, but I wondered how, and I changed the address and who the contact person was. They mailed a letter to the previous address saying, there's been a request to change this. Unless you notify us, we're going to change it. And so I did kind of track that so it would work because, again, these were going to the previous DSROA address at 30 East Center Street. Most of them, there's several still in P.O. Box C, which has been, you know, quite a long outdated. So the best way is get them to the active DSROA P.O. Box, and then they will change with board of directors and follow. That should be, not a problem in the future. So if you would, as our only member of the water committee right now, be willing to do that.
Okay, I think
we have a water committee right now, and you are on it. Dale's been on it, and so right now, being over water, I'm considering that you and Dale and I are the water committee and need to work on it. We definitely need more help, but this is one thing that before we find out the hard way that we've overlooked something, we need to do.
How do we spell your name?
What's that?
I need our name.
Jody
Akers. A-K-E-R-S. Thank you. Okay. This is good input. Some we need to discuss more as a committee and then bring back to the board. What are we recommending as soon as we have good enough weather to look into, Leaf Spring development? That is definitely the direction that we need to go. We've talked some and worked through some in the budget in November as far as doing some of that. I'm still confused or but part of it was who's willing to participate financially or manpower wise to help. So this is helpful to do that. I think that there is some
I think we need to have the association develop the spring and then we can have connections off for cattle watering troughs that are there and connections off for culinary, and that, and then individuals may need to fund and participate in digging trenches to lots and those types of things. But I don't think we want individuals developing the spring when it's a shared water right. I think that is the part that needs to be coordinated by the ranch. Right, and that's probably about all the budget that we would have to consider. We may not even have enough budget to do that when we actually get looking into it, but I think that's what we ought to focus our efforts on is developing and protecting the spring.
I agree. I think we all do. I think we're also going to have to go back in some do some encouragement and to get more of the 20 lot owners to participate financially because it won't, three can't carry it, the association can't carry it, and there's several that I'm curious we can visit, that right now, I have one cabin that's, a full cabin in that area that is listed for sale. The present owner is trying to sell, so they're not willing to commit probably to do a lot, but knowing whoever buys it is going to want to have water, whether they have a closer area to haul or options to do that. And so that's where it's still, we've got to represent who's there now, but also look somewhat in the future.
So can you get a number and then divide it up with the percentage-wise?
I get enough participants to be able to fund it now and also make sure that we've told people, If you don't participate now and you choose to, or a future owner choose to, they can, but it's going to be at a different price in the future, and that, you know, and then it'll move forward that way. So we will work on that.
Maintained in the future as well, maintained financially.
Right.
I think maybe, you know, since it's going to be pretty long term to get this done, but maybe in the interim we could do the water containment first, so we can haul water closer, maybe even before the pipeline goes in.
To have a hauling station there at Lee Spring or Broad Hall instead of coming all the way down the ranch out. Right. And that's right. I think phase one, if we can develop the spring, bring it to the bottom of the hill, have a water trough and maybe a pickup station and stuff, and then the piping out to lots and stuff, see how that happens, would be a phase two. Okay. Okay, as far as water then, and do you have other things on the water system expansion?
Well, actually, no, you guys have covered it fairly well. My thing was is that when we start working on this system, and we work on the system a lot, you know, we are always coming up with different ideas in relation to what we need to do. And just a couple of things that I want to pass by everyone is one of the things that and you've already talked about it, is we need to put some kind of pressure relief on that system. The last time it blew apart, the time previous to this, is when we had a member close the valve to work on his own system because he's connected to the ranch water system, and then failed to reopen the valve. When the pump got started, of course, you know, the water had nowhere to go, and because water's incompressible, boom, went out at the weakest point, which is that valve box. This time, and I have to tell you, if you haven't got a chance, if you get out to the ranch, go over to the water tank and look at the amount of ice in that tank. It is impressive. And I've been, because I did the winter managing thing for several years, I was always had my head in that tank at different times, didn't know if I needed to pump or not. And I've never seen it with as big a layers of ice that are in there. I mean, there's massive amounts on the walls that ordinarily weren't there before. I mean, you might get a layer, but it's thick ice.
It's been cold.
It's been really cold. Anyway, all that aside, the couple things that I really want to address, and that is one is the pressure, some kind of pressure relief on the system to avoid blowing our system apart, you know, for whatever reason. The other thing that I'd like to see is that...
And Brent, you're thinking like during warmer weather as part of our... Spring improvement there.
Right, exactly. Because we're going to have things torn down anyway.
Yeah, because we need a whole list of things, including great shutoff valves to every cabin.
Shutoff valves, and then I'd also like to put in some kind of a standpipe there at the vault to where if we have a problem with the 40,000-gallon tank and need to shut the water off there, we can put a temporary tank there at the vault to fill and then distribute to the cabins and the lower ranch, we can have somebody come in with a 3,000-gallon tank truck that's NSF approved and, you know, fill that tank and then distribute and fill that tank and then distribute while we're making our repairs or whatever. But it would be, what we're running into is we run into these situations where these guys have been out of water for days. I mean, over a week, right?
A week.
Yeah. And luckily the Shemps were in the one cabin, and of course Paul and Nancy are trying to accommodate them, and they go, oh, don't worry about us, we'll melt snow, which is what they did. They went out and melted snow. But we don't want to ask everyone to do that. And to be honest with you, I'm worried about some people having access to fire. So I prefer that they didn't melt snow, you know. But anyway, there's just a couple, three things. The valves, some kind of an emergency standpipe that we could use to plug a temporary tank into when we're making repairs. And then we need to make some more. That lower water system is actually pretty good, but I'd like to extend it down at the headquarters area when we shut everything down and put a couple more valves in down there and then put a couple more hydrants in down there that would make things a little easier and a little more convenient down the road. And then we have just a ton of hydrants that need to be replaced. The hydrant at almost every single cabin needs to be replaced. they've either been run into and knocked over or they're damaged in some way or shape or form. So,
well, I think with a lot of this, you look at a yard hydrant, how do you fix it, especially on this lower system?
Yeah.
You have to drain the whole entire
system. You have to drain the whole entire system.
Personally, on my list, which I drew up, I'd like to put a valve in front of every single yard hydrant. It just makes sense. If it starts to leak, you don't have to drain the whole system.
Well, wouldn't we want a valve that went to every cabin, so you shut off the cabin, the yard hydrant?
Where the hydrants run off the line, whether it's in line after the valve or if it's, you know what I mean? I don't think they're...
That's what I said. Paul's got a pretty comprehensive list. There's a little bit of fine-tuning on-site we're just going to have to explore, and we will the next couple of months, so that when we line up equipment stuff, we can go in 2 days or something and really dig up, replace, install most of this in conjunction with draining the 40,000-gallon tank.
Right.
One of the things that I was thinking about what we can do is before the season gets going and before we do all this stuff is I can actually go in and pre-dig all the holes. So the holes are dug, you know, and then when we shut down, it's not a matter of going in and we don't shut it down and then dig the holes.
Right.
All the holes are dug. We go in there and we just start cutting pipe and replacing valves and doing all that stuff. But trust me when I tell you, these winter repairs on the water system are very difficult.
Well, and that's what the only thing I wanted to say was, you know, in meeting with Paul and Nancy now the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks consistently, they've spent more time on the December cold snap deep freeze and now this last frozen tank and blow apart than everything else combined in the last 30 days. And we just can't afford that. We've got to get systems where they're easy to maintain.
Exactly. And that's my whole premise, the whole thing is. And
so one thing I would like to suggest as we design things is that we maybe improve the quality of the system as we're doing it. You know,
well, Ben and I were talking.
No more PVC ball valves. No more. You know, we should have valve cans or the cast iron valve cans that stick up a foot above grade level so that you can find them when there's a foot of snow and you know, put in a system that's well mapped and that we, you know, can manage better. So that's just kind of maybe a little bit of philosophy to try to do things right or a little more rugged than some of the things have been done before.
It's a big difference that that PVC ball valve that I bought, 4-inch, was $100 or $90.
In my opinion, we should never buy a 4-inch ball valve. It should be a metal gate valve, and that's what we should be using on things like that.
Right.
But I know that that's, you know, just a change. And when we do these things in the spring, I'd like to at least try to force that to fit within the budget that we've put together so that we've got a system that 20 years later is still operating.
Exactly. One other thing on water. Water right 89-15-80 is coming up for...
It's been dead for years.
We've researched it. I've gotten probably 6 letters on it.
Uh-huh.
We are aware of it. We've researched it. It's one that has been dead. It's just a filing still lingering in their system, and it needs to die and expire.
Okay. All right. Just,
we're not going to lose anything.
Works for me. Quick question so we can move on. Follow-up test for culinary system. Did we approve testing once a month rather than quarterly, especially on that upper system?
I thought that's what we were doing. However, we're going to coordinate it with making sure that you took them into Mark so that you're not having to drive them to Cedar City.
Right, the difference between $20 a quarter and $20 a month. I just wanted to make sure that...
Yeah.
I'm not doing it now, but I'm thinking when we get the system going.
No, and that's the question. The certified water operator plan, the only discussion we've had is, you know, we've talked about having King County Water Conservancy District and Mark do certain stuff.
Right.
One, we don't know what that's going to cost us for sure. You know, they've had discussion. I mean, he's been to the ranch. He's met with you. I mean, Dirk's talked with him. I'm recommending that right now we make a a formal written request to the conservancy for an annual operating cost to have them do it. I think that on site, Paul, you need to have enough training and stuff to be able to operate this. But as far as going to these classes all around the state of Utah to maintain your certification and stuff, I think we're better ahead to have the Water Conservancy and Mark, who is certified, be our qualifier like Taylor Button has been in the past. And not spend, you know, just for those that don't know, we had a water, Rural Water Association monthly meeting that was here in Kanab in December. Paul attended, I attended, and Dale attended for, what, 6 hours or whatever?
Yeah.
It was an all-day type thing. Most of the attendants there are just there not to learn anything but to re-up their certification. And so for Paul to get certified like Taylor had, and then to go, the next one was in Price, was this Wednesday.
That's just one that I picked.
Yeah. That we considered. I don't know that it's worth, and you know, like I said, Paul needs to go to some of those trainings that will help to operate the system, but as far as going through the red tape and stuff, I think we're better off one, working with Water Conservancy to help us with some of the sampling and have them do that. But we don't know what it'll cost. We won't know for sure. So at this point, before we put a lot more effort and time into doing that, I would like to see that we write a letter to the Conservancy and see how much they will charge us to do that.
Right. The certification's in March. Am I still going to do that?
At this point, if they will do it for a reasonable price,
right.
I don't know, and you and I didn't get a chance to go over it. I don't know how you feel. I would rather the red tape and the bureaucracy of keeping that, I would rather them do.
Right. Well,
there is some training that they went over in that meeting that is valuable, and that, you know, how to flush a system properly and stuff. But again, a lot of that Mark will show us up there on site instead of you driving to Price, Utah to sit in class for 8 hours, and they show you in a PowerPoint, and then you get to Deer Springs and still have a lot of questions.
Right.
So the Water Conservancy's next board meeting is next Thursday, and in order to have something on the agenda, it probably needs to be turned in Tuesday of next week, and so
what time is their meeting?
7 o'clock or 6 o'clock.
Can we make a written request, or do we need to be show up? Somebody need to go to the meeting?
I think you need to do both.
Yes, I might should attend as well.
But
I definitely, if we're going to make that, then we should
next Thursday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plan on you coming in and you or both of us going and attending to be there.
Where is it at?
Where are they meeting?
Should be in the county commission chambers.
You know, I mean, the only reason I was pushing for this is they've always said that there needs to be a certified operator on site. I know Mark is mobile, and it would be, you know, something that we have to financially cover to have him go out there and train or test or do whatever.
Well, I think that's our next step, to see what they're willing to do.
Right.
And you know, how much they can help us out of their budget. There's going to be some cost. They can't do it for free. But
right.
I think that, you know, again, Mark's been up there and been very cooperative and given us quite a bit of help so far. Because that's their purpose, is to help everybody
right.
in King
County. Well, it's not a complicated system. It's, you know, we don't have any chlorination. We don't.
So I'll work with Dirk in putting in a written request before Tuesday to get on the agenda. And then let's plan on you attending and following up to see.
Could you get back with me on a time?
Are you going to go then?
It's going to be 6.
I'm going to try to.
Maybe you guys should do your meeting, or maybe the meeting on Thursday should be later.
Right.
So you can roll into it.
We're going to need both numbers, too, from the Conservancy, and, you know, if you were going to be certified yourself to see what the difference is.
Right. A lot of those classes don't cost anything. It's just
yeah.
my time. I think it's $435 for the class and then the test. That would be it. I don't know. I think it's 3 classes or 3 credits a year you have to carry to keep your certification.
Yeah, that's you're getting licensed the first time, but roughly it's going to be Paul driving the Delta or Price or something 4 days a year to keep it maintained. And so they're not a lot of money, but the time involved and
You don't think the ranch, that would benefit the ranch in any way?
Well,
I mean, we're looking at new water systems. We're looking at...
It's like the deal like you brought up. There's somebody there all the time.
I think it's a good thing to have the training. There used to be 9 systems up on Cedar Mountain that all had their own operators. There are now 1. Primarily because of having the oversight of the certified operator, the new requirements. There's no question that the state is trying to squeeze out small systems and make it harder and harder and harder. In my view, the benefit of having the Water Conservancy look at it, it's our system, but I do think we'll get a lot of backing and financial support for improvements that we need to make in our system and assistance with a lot of those things. So I think we explore the relationship. I don't think that we want to say at all that we should take training away from you, but my experience, like Ben, is that you can find your training for practical everyday use items in more efficient ways than, you know.
Right.
The value would be...
Oh, the going to that class in Cedar was...
And awesome. When you get a certified operator, you still have to be kind of a journeyman under somebody, so it's not like we can ever stand on our own without that assistance anyway. So, you know, I think we just explore it, but I don't think at all we back off on.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't go and don't plan on that in March. I mean, we still need
those types of things.
You know, don't let us forget, because if we're going to do it,
yeah,
March is the time to do it.
Right.
And especially kind of to some degree, I think if we've already taken the test to date, and it's just a matter of taking the test and one more day, we probably ought to do that. But the question would be, how does the relationship, you know, move forward? So,
and the Water Conservancy is a great thing. That's just another bonus.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see where they're at. That's the next step in determining how much they can do, how much we should do to make it work most efficiently. That's all.
Okay, any other water-related issues? Okay, agriculture and wildlife. We finalized the lease with Doug Hunt, and he, as per the lease requirement, needs to declare areas that he wants to use in the ranch. And I've had a meeting with him. We also had Dale involved to give us a little bit of guidance on historical uses. This is a map. Anybody's welcome to come to where they can see it better at the ranch allotment areas. Last year we ran no cows in the BLM section of the ranch. We gave it a year of rest, so to speak. Our current permit, we're allowed to run somewhere around 117 cows for about a 4.5-5 month period. And so all these areas kind of in the darker yellow are where they could go. In the past, when we leased out the whole ranch, There wasn't necessarily a lot of management in saying trying to keep cows over here for a while and then rotate them over here and do these kind of things. But in order to manage our feed more effectively, and we also have more than double that amount of cattle permits that are in what they call a suspension. That if we improved the rangeland and could show that those additional cows could go on the land, then we could double our production. So, but some of that we're going to have to work through some rangeland improvement, but it ties in quite nicely, for example, to the things that we want to do for fire prevention and open up and create some more grassland areas. And also there are some areas that we want to get the cows in early and get rid of the cheap grasses and stuff that are going to be a fire hazard later in the year, that if we would have grazed off, they'll be gone. So we kind of came up with a strategy to do this. Hunt's going to utilize the meadow areas and around the fish pond and what we call the lower meadow area, which is in between the fenced-in meadow and the fish ponds. As he did last year, we ran about 50 head of cows there, and we'll try to do the same with the improvements that Dale and Larry made up there. Probably the next year, we may even be able to see some more improvements there, especially if we do some cross fencing there. But given that we've got some fragile area with new seed on and stuff, we don't want this year to be a year that we overtax that area in any way. And also, we have to balance the fact that Johnsons are doing some croplands, and so we can't really be in the mode of we just turn cows loose on the ranch and they wander wherever they want, and of course they'll wander to their croplands and take care of those. So, you know, kind of trying to reserve Johnsons the right to harvest their crops and or graze off their crops, and knowing that our fences, ideally, everywhere that we've got planted crops, we should have a good fence around it, but we don't now. And so we've got to kind of manage around that. But we do have some fenced-in areas. Primarily, this area here, Deer Springs Point area, is a good area that we should be able to control cattle in. And so I would like to suggest, Paul, as we have time and can work on it, that this fence is probably the first fence that needs to be kind of looked at as far as is it tuned up enough to hold cows in. We know it's not, really, because we had neighboring cows wander in quite a bit last year, but we need to really work this fence over around here. We've got a lot of natural barrier with the cliff on that allotment, but this fence here needs to be looked at. And I think most of it along the road looked pretty good to me, but I know here is a little questionable, and maybe some of this is
probably questionable.
We'll just call it the Deer Springs Point. The other area that can be managed fairly successfully is this area here. Primarily because the cattle are not going to come up into this area because it's mostly junipers and no feed area. And for the most part, I guess historically, as we went through this with Dale, as cows were put into here, they tend to, you know, favor hanging out in this area there. But there's not a lot of cattle that can go in there. And so we want to do a couple of things with our BLM permit areas. We want to structure these rotation areas, and we want to avoid cropland management, but we also don't want to go year after year not using our permit and have the BLM say, well, look, we're going to cut it in half again because it doesn't look like you can even use what's there. And the other aspect is the fact that we're bringing in less revenue. So we want to maximize our revenue to the ranch by bringing in as many AUMs as possible, because that's what we're going to get paid for. This Deer Springs Point area, in years past, I don't know how many years past, maybe 10 to 20 years past, had a lot more production that's been taken over by sagebrush and stuff now. And so that's one of the things that I'm trying to work with the range con. If you look at the next point up,
Deer Range,
if you're kind of up on the pinks here and you look out there, you can see that in the last year that they've done a lot of rangeland management down there where they've mowed and taken care of some things. And when I talked to the BLM, They said, basically the rangeland improvements need to be for generic wildlife, cattle included, but they want to see things that are, help the deer, help the elk, those kind of things, and Larry wants to see those kind of things too. And but also fire prevention is, you know, the one of the things that gives us a lot of, funding qualification nowadays, and so that's one of the things that we'll be working for. So we're a little uncertain how many animals can be put in there, and we're going to evaluate this, and basically Mr. Hunt has committed to build this area and this area this year, and so the intent is that we'd put roughly another 40 to 50 cows down in those areas, would gain some experience this year, would see how they do, what kind of improvements we need to make. We're not sure that we have water that we'll have anywhere in this area, for example, past July. And so we're going to have to maybe look at some water improvements and evaluate those kind of things. But we need to start gaining experience, because a lot of this, like the Deer Springs Point area, has kind of been semi-ignored for a lot of years. But we think we can, you know, bring it back into some production and do something with it. And so that's kind of the strategy. This area up through here, there's not a lot of feed area, and apparently, you know, probably nobody's ever really ran cows up in Slide Canyon or done much with those kind of areas. But if we do some of the things that Brent's working on, trying to get an additional trail made through here and do some mowing around this broad hollow area and stuff, you know, we can perhaps create something. But that's not going to happen this year, and we don't have the fences to manage that. Anything that was put in this area would be right down here in Broad Hollow, eating off the cropland. And also the same over here. There's really not a lot of feed production. But in order to manage cows in here, which should be a great future with the longhorns, you'd almost need to kind of move them about every 10 days. You know, go to some place, let them work that area over. Maybe it's not an area that's really fenced in, but you know, you kind of manage the cows by moving them from feed area to feed area. That might also work out real good for, you know, dude ranch activities, people that wanted to come and move the cows from pasture A to pasture B. And here's the schedule we're going to try to do that. But Hunt is going to ride a lot of that this year and evaluate that and help us decide what can be done. Apparently in years past over in Johnny Brown area, there used to be some cows over there, maybe 10 or something.
About
10, 15. Apparently there have been some problems with now, you know, some of the residences over there, and should cows be in there or not in there. And so we weren't sure. That whole area needs a little bit more decision-making on our part. So I think the plan this year right now would be Hunt will take, you know, the metal private areas here. Johnson's largely have this area here. And Hunt will take these BLM areas here. The other thing that I need to work on is the BLM permit does not start until June 10th, which is pretty late. There's a lot of good feed in there before that, and particularly even some of these grasses that are more of a fire hazard that we'd want to get rid of. But I need to meet with the range con to look at that. I'm not sure why they've got such a late date on things or what the history is behind that, but it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But sometimes they they like to say, well, this is a grass that grows and reseeds during this period, and so we don't want any animals on it because we want that to happen. But
has it always been that way?
Apparently,
it has. It's always been a problem, especially like Deer Springs Point. The majority of the feed is that crested wheat that most years by June 10th is completely dry. There's no nutritional value, and in years past, the bug, the whatever that little beetle is eating it, where it's got to get up and get growing April, but if it could be grazed some in May and between June 1st and June 10th.
How long did that crested wheat stay around last year?
Stay green? Probably toward the end of June.
It was better, but there was no bugs last year.
Yeah.
The first year that we haven't seen.
We haven't had black grass bugs in years.
It sure looked good for a long time.
Sure did. But if we could come in on that on May 15th.
Yeah.
But some of that was not grazing it last year at all, and so hopefully that helped to strengthen it.
So I think what we're doing is going to be healthy in terms of starting to manage the land. Potentially as much as double our income over last year, which was double over any previous year. So that's would be a good addition to look for. But I would say right now, even on days that you can, I know we can't go build a lot of new fence when we got snow on the ground, but there's probably some of these days here in the late winter where, you know, we've got 6 inches of snow on the ground, but it's still plenty good to go tune up wires and,
right.
And you know, work things over as a project.
No, later.
Does
he only have longhorns? He doesn't have anything else.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway,
is
that
should be... Is this what's across from the ranch house?
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. Johnson's are talking about grazing their cows there. Right? They were...
This is all the way to the point.
Well, I know, but they were talking about...
This is east, and Johnson's are south.
Johnson's would be down in this area.
Johnson's, this is the south of the house where we're at.
Oh, okay.
This is all of that. This is the 20,000 that I'm going
to be along. Okay, all right, okay.
The big arm movements and the slow talking count.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. In a lot of ways, that area should be our most AUM area that we need to really work over in. So our most effective AUM area... We've not done any rangeland improvement on for how many years?
30
years. And we don't know that we have a water source.
Well, you have two dams.
I've seen
right
that reservoir.
Yeah, yeah, there are two there, but will they have water in August?
I saw them in the spring. There was no water. There was a little bit of water.
And no water in August.
That's what we're talking about. We still need to, before...
reservoir?
Well, we went and walked this one this late fall. All the water that does run off is going past this reservoir because
right.
it's eroded. We've got to get a backhoe down there and do a half day's work to
but
rebuild
we need
it.
Some BLM.
But we've got it. Some of that we've got to get some
we
approval
bring
to
equipment
do
in
too
in
much.
That other side right there with the windmill, that's a constant. But the
no water problems over on
but
that.
But the well
side.
Is broken, or the well head is cracked, so it doesn't come up out of that pipe. It just kind of goes right onto the ground. So we might have to do a little
good.
Bit of work on that.
Yeah.
That's actually a good water source there. Tasty.
And we've got the spring down at the bottom of that part of the allotment, mm-hmm. too, so, or the creek, I should say. So anyway, I think that's a good plan. We'll see a lot more improvement this year than last year, and hopefully something we can build on again for the next year as we manage our lands. One of our keys is really trying to get our BLM range con guys, you know, behind us and helping us with some of the things that we might want to do. So.
Well, I think if we don't do it, there's four or five other guys that want to do it right behind us, right? If they could get their hands on it.
Oh, no question.
And then that would be a huge problem for the entire ranch.
Right. Yeah, we absolutely don't want to go down the road of losing the allotment and losing the protection buffer that gives around the whole ranch.
Mm-hmm.
because we're mismanaging it or not managing it at all. So no question about that. You know, I think we all generally feel, even though it's a BLM property, a little bit of kind of a buffer feeling and an ownership, if you will, of those areas that are within our fences and within our control. And so that's, something we want to make sure we keep. Okay, any other agriculture questions? That's one of the things that I'm going to verify, but it shouldn't be. From everything that I've looked into, the Forest Service, different story. But the BLM, we have the right to lease out the AUMs as long as we have a lease agreement. And so
there's either two ways to legally handle it, in either paying the surcharge or signing him a lease where he qualifies as the main operator. That avoids the surcharge, and that some of that we'll need to look into this year. Which
we're kind of planning paying the surcharge, you know, because I think that's safe, easy way.
Could I get that water information back that they handed you?
So
I can put it in the file.
Okay, next item: roads and fire protection. Brent.
Approval. A couple of things. I've had, because we're going to go in and thin those oaks out, I've actually had two or three people who've asked me if they could get some of that out of there.
For firewood?
Well, no, actually, what they've actually asked about is they're building some kind of a building, and they'd like maybe five or six. Each of them would like five or six of the, you know, 3 or 4 inch in diameter pieces. And I said, you know, that are 6 to 8 feet long. And I said, you know, doesn't matter to me if I cut it into firewood or into those lengths. I'm not getting thousands of requests. I'm just getting a few. And so I figured that it's probably no big deal. If it became a problem, I'll bring it up. But I don't think it's a problem. You know, they're only one, five or six. I'll call them posts, for lack of a better term.
I think a great thing to manage, Brent, overall, is that we don't see a lot of slash in the end.
No, that's
getting rid of things.
We got that chipper, and that chipper actually works pretty good, or as we like to call it, Fargo. But anyway, it works pretty good. And so that's one of the other things that I would really like to think about that we do, and that is that some of this stuff that we chip, I'm going to try to, that old international truck, the one that's got the water tank on it, I'm going to build a box to go in the back of that, and then we're going to chip, when we chip in some areas that we don't want to throw the chips right back down, we'll, you know, haul the chips other places where we can use them, and they'll provide good, you know, good ground cover and a few things like that. So, anyway, I've got the things lined up with the people over on the Johnny Brown who are going to willing to donate their time and help out with that road project from both directions.
Great.
This next year.
We'll be using those culverts from the...
Yes, we're going to be using the culverts. I've actually, before the snow hit, I went out there, and I'm pretty confident. In fact, maybe we can even borrow Larry's concrete saw. I'm pretty confident that most of the pieces we can butt together and use some quick patch to fill in the gaps, because there's the concrete or the rebar in that is still in place. There's a couple that might be beneficial to trim them up a little bit so they'll come together. But, you know, those culverts can be used and I think installed without, you know, too much difficulty. And plus, they're an eyesore. Just getting them out of the ranch will,
right,
you know, get them out of the headquarters will actually work pretty good. And I don't know where we are in our Title V. right at the moment?
Harry Barger came by the office just an hour before our meeting there to give me an update, and also a bunch more forms for us to fill out. And so he was almost apologetic for, you know, there's probably 80 questions that, on the forms of things that, and he said, I know a lot of this you've already kind of answered, and some that you can say already answered in the permit request or something. But so what I was going to do is have my secretary type it up so that we can, and then I'll email it to you, and you and I can okay. then insert, you know, so she'll just type up the questions, and then we can
just fill answer
in the answers.
Okay.
And turn that in. Also, they would like to meet with you and I next week if there's a time you're in town.
Just you tell me a day, and I'll just come to down on that day. So you pick a day and pick a time that's
okay.
good for you, and just
probably
let me
like Wednesday afternoon.
Okay, perfect.
Me.
Yeah.
So I'll call Harry, double check with them, but they want us to meet with their survey guy, Dan somebody.
Okay.
and kind of help him. They need apparently a much more detailed map than our crayon maps now.
Oh, really?
And so
I worked for hours on those.
But what they, you know, go figure. Our, you know, I shouldn't say, but our tax dollars at work. But you know, so if we'll come in, line him out, and meet with him, then they have to go out and actually survey the whole thing.
Right.
Run a GPS, you know, while they drive it, basically. So
right.
Not a big deal.
But you have to pay for that.
No.
You have to pay for the survey?
No. So.
Hello.
That's why I say our tax dollars at work. We are paying for it.
We've always had to pay for the survey.
Yeah.
Their survey.
So I think in this case, we're probably getting a lot of concessions because of the situation, and that we wouldn't get otherwise. And I think, well, it's not a bad time to have some benefit from those, especially on the Slide Canyon route that we have added to this same request that we probably should have always had. And obviously, they can't do it until they could drive through Slide Canyon,
sure.
which is going to be a while. So I don't know.
Yeah, that I can guarantee.
Maybe they have the, you know, snowmobile GPS. I don't know.
So
we'll talk through that when we meet with them.
Harry Barber's filling the position stuff for Hugh Wolf now that he's gone. Is it any?
No, they have. They're using somebody in Cedar City or Richfield, he told me, I just can't remember. So he's still been communicating with Hugh's, kind of been doing part of the job, even though he's gone. He still works for the BLM, and so they've been emailing and doing things back and forth, and they have some other person fulfilling this assignment that doesn't live in Kanab. So, but Harry's kind of our point guy, and seems to be coordinating it all, seems to be doing a great job. So I'll email you and catch up with you, but let's target for Wednesday.
Okay. Wednesday's good. That'll work fine for me. The fire prevention thing is, I'm working with Earl on that. He's had some medical problems, and so I, you know, he's not been quite as active. He's starting to come back around, so. But the big thing on the fire thing is they're changing a bunch of the emergency frequencies. So I've got to take the two radios that we have. We have a mobile radio and a portable radio. And I've got to take them and bring them back in, and they'll be reprogrammed for this next fire season. The drifting thing, we've been pretty good. Where's Larry? Oh. Anyway, the suggestion that Larry made about moving most of the snow to one side of the road has really helped. That little teeny bit of work that he did beforehand when he brought the grader down that time really helped.
And we don't know where the road is.
Yeah, except we don't know where the road is. It's
we may need to put some of those reflectors.
Well, I made a suggestion about getting some fiberglass deals and putting them up in the fall and then taking them down in the spring.
That's
some people don't end up in the ditch.
One of the things that we've been kind of been dealing with in relation to that, it's if you're familiar with it like I am, it's not a big deal. Or Dale is, because he's out there all the time. Or Larry is, but some of the other people when they come out, especially the tourists. I love the tourists. The big problem is now is anybody sees a plowed road and it's like, oh, well, we can go there.
Ignore the sign that says impassable when wet.
Yeah, well,
snow's not wet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
As it melted, yeah.
So, in fact, I know Ben's going to probably talk about the billing thing here in a second. We did plow the Podunk. And, the arrangement that you guys agreed to, or the people everybody agreed to, is that donation that Bob made, he covered that. Paul and I did it. It was pretty dark and pretty cold by the time we got done.
I was toasty.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was kind of like landing on someone on an aircraft carrier. This way. Anyway, the bad part was the snow conditions really changed when it started getting cold, which is amazing. The big thing we have right now on everything is the melting. Things are starting to melt. We're getting I'm assuming it's our January thaw. Have you been out there for a few days, Dale? Okay. As you well know, the scutum paw is starting to melt off really good. And that I call it the 4 mile hill. That was our worst spot. That's going to be really a challenge. Like today, I'm going to wait till the sun goes down and starts, firming up again before I try to get in there.
So you planned on our long meeting.
Yeah. In some respects, a long meeting is actually a good thing. No, I lie. That's never a good thing. But the same thing holds true. I mean, the road to my place off of Meadow Canyon, of course, the snow's piled up way up on each side of the road, and it melts. It only has one place to go, and that's onto the road. And unfortunately, I didn't time my arrival the other day and very well, and had a real hard time getting up my steep hill. That goes in the last little bit. So I've got to do some water things. One of the things that I do during the winter, and I'm going to start doing now because we're starting to have melt off, is I take a shovel and I go out and I will dig through some of the snow berms and let the snow, where we're getting big puddles, and let it drain off get it off the road. Because you get the water off the road and it gets better. And then Dale got stuck the other day.
Poor Dale.
Look at that.
I buried that baby, didn't I?
Well, stuck. I was laughing at him. I was laughing at him really hard, except then that very same morning I was going to make fun of him because I know I was going to see him. I got stuck myself. So I couldn't. And I did it in the same exact way he did it. I just didn't do it in the same spot he did. So anyway. Did you want to talk about the billing thing?
Well, just for those, we talked about a little bit before. We've modified things a little bit, and Paul and we've worked out an arrangement with an invoice book that he has with him all the time, so that as he does repairs, part of it was just clarifying. We talked about a two-hour minimum on some things, just differentiating between, and he's done good now with, is this a one-time service that somebody wants, and he's got to go out and fire up equipment and warm it up and go out and do it? It takes substantially more. There needs to be an hourly minimum. Or some of those that live up there that says, hey, every time it snows, I'm not going to come ask you. I'm authorizing you hit my road, and we bill them in 15-minute increments. But while he's got it warmed up and he's doing the ranch area and some of the ranch road, he hits their driveway and just bills them actual use time at the $50 an hour. And so he's got invoices and stuff. And has been in and out of Art Ornelani's place a couple of times, been up to Broad Hall. Brent has paid for snow removal, and then into Podunk, which we've discussed as that Bob Becker had requested and stuff as a trade for what he had done. So I think that we're good on the future billing system, and I know they turned in a check already on, as related, because we may use this for my other thing, but there's been a little bit of a disconnect between what they tell people they owe and then when they pay or if they pay Linda, and they don't know whether it was ever paid or not and stuff. So now this book with carbon copy receipts, one will go to whoever's getting paid. They'll keep one. One will go to Linda with the payment once it's done. And so it's you know, up to date, and I think, you know, we're good with all that. Little discussion that's separate from snow removal is just overall invoicing, and I don't know if we want to talk about it in under finances. Is I have a little bit of question is I think we need to be pretty consistent. Either it's a we all trade around and there is some give and take, which there always is, or when it's a if you donate something to the ranch, it's a donation, and then if you need something, we bill you, and so that it's just fair to everybody. You know, because we have to have a consistent policy, because we will never be fair. I'm convinced we will never compensate Brent Fulmer for the time he puts in, the use of his equipment stuff. We need to try to be fair, but if people are saying I'm giving this as a donation, and they do, and 3 months later they want gravel or, you know, or grading, are we obligated to give it to them for free because they kind of done us a favor? Or, hey, they donated that and then they request something and we bill them. Just to work that out so that it's fair to everybody, and some people don't say, hey, you're charging me every penny in a two-hour minimum, and I know that other members are getting stuff kind of in a trade, and we just need to be able to be accountable to that. And so I've talked about it, and again, I have, you know, total trust in Paul and Nancy's judgment in doing that, especially now that we've discussed through helping to regulate that. And you know, I don't know, part of it we'll just have to discuss as it goes forward. But in 2010, I want to clarify up front, I mean, there's a dozen people that have done a lot of donating, whether it's time or actual money. They've gone out and bought hundreds, if not thousands of dollars of equipment, stuff that Dale and Larry has done and stuff, to know, is this something you expect to be paid for? Is it a donation? Is it a trade? You don't need to get paid, but you expect to have something back for it, and just kind of check that so that we can respond back. So, one, that invoice book will help us to track it. Even if it is a trade, it's documented what was done when, and it was either paid in cash or it was in exchange for this trade. So
we get Brent eggs and milk on a regular basis.
I get eggs and milk. My rewards in heaven.
So I'm very good about that. The only other thing on roads, Brent, if I can, that I just wanted to mention because we've talked about it. North of the Half Moon, we're talking about this oak removal from the road and stuff. If we take out the big stuff, if you can watch a couple of the clumps of small stuff and not totally shred it and cut it down now in small clumps, what we've talked about is banking dirt around the 40,000-gallon tank to prevent some of this freezing and stuff, which I think will solve 90% of our problem. Right now, wind blows out totally under it. What froze up is exposed. If it had 3 feet of dirt piled around it, it would not have froze. But at the same time, for the freezing and just for the visual to hide that tank, I would still like to have one of the backhoes in the spring scoop up some of those right along the road and haul them down and bury them around the south and west side of that tank to hide it. It'll shade it and keep it more cool and hidden from the road visual in the summer, and the leaves fall off and allow the sunlight to come up and warm up the tank in the winter. And that oak right there is the way to
That's a great suggestion, and we can do that.
So if you just identify some,
sure, and I'll do that. And you know, I hope you know that I want to be real conservative about this. You know, I mean, you guys saw the pictures. That's way overboard, and I want to be really conservative. But taking some, transplanting them over there would be a really great
somewhere
idea.
We just take an entire, I mean, 5 or 10 scoops of the backhoe, put them on a trailer or something, and take them down there, and then bury them while we bank this up around there. I think that we may need to water a little the first year, but they'll establish and be a nice.
With all the trees that are coming out of there, because they're dead.
Well, that's so many of them were killed. Now it's a bare, naked spot. Yeah. You can see it from the, you know, the very end of the county road.
Exactly.
Even on the north end of the airstrip, just alongside that road. On the left side of the road, alongside there, to kind of block the view from the water tank.
But that's a great suggestion, and we'll do that. Yeah, it's probably less work than you know, cutting and hauling.
Right.
And
some of that small stuff that's a pain to cut with a chainsaw, yeah, anyway, yeah, just leave some clumps, yeah, that we can scoop out.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be rooted pretty deep.
Okay. Any other items on roads? Okay.
Well, Larry's here. I don't know if he wanted to say anything. Roads?
Roads, Larry?
Snow drifting, snow removal.
I saw you got your backhoe down.
Yeah. I think it's been a lot better this year than it was last year.
Because you got on early.
Yeah, getting on it early and staying on it, that's the key. That's really the key.
We have some budget set aside to pay for the road maintenance in the spring, so we should be in good shape there to do that.
You're going
to
try some of that gravel that Dale has?
I think we need to evaluate early spring when we can see how it did. Yeah. We got the test area that Dale put in. We'll see. Yeah. It seemed to be looking great, right?
I think it's going to work.
You're looking great all fall.
Yeah.
The black is now white.
Yeah.
Okay. Shauna, ranch activities.
Well, we're just waiting to gear up because we have to. We'll put out some flyers and some ads when we get closer to the time.
I think you ought to make some kind of a thing on the cookouts. That's kind of a nice flyer that goes out with the reservations. I did get the reservations from Linda. And who wants to guess how many reservations have been made for 2010 so far?
10.
25. 10, 25. Larry?
18.
18, Ben?
I don't know.
Do we win anything? Because I don't
know.
Nobody wins anything. Okay, so far on the books we have 40. So Shauna was close.
Yay.
So 40. How many of them requested Linux?
None.
13. We'll discuss that down the road. But so anyhow, so we have already 40 people that are coming next year. That would have been nice if we got a flyer out. So and Linda sends out an envelope.
Is that what she's doing? She sends out.
Yeah, she sends out mails them out a letter, and so we may as well throw something in with it.
Yeah, I didn't know she did it.
Yeah. And so when people are coming, they've got that.
I
got
to walk down and get my truck.
And I think that's going to be a lot better than on paragraph 6 of her letter. It's just mentioned as a line item.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, what would be, I don't know if we happen to have any pictures from a cookout last year or something that you could put in with a flyer. So there you go.
It wouldn't necessarily be a cookout that actually happened at that
but
time.
But something that looks like a cookout at the ranch. And make a flyer around that. Here's the costs. Here's who you make your reservations
from. How often does she do that?
How long has she been
doing
that?
How often is she doing those flyers?
Oh, I think she kind of does them daily as they come in.
As a reservation.
Oh, I see. So she sends a packet of confirmation to them.
Yeah.
So
if you reserve something, she books it and she sends
it out. An email flyer too.
Okay.
Could possibly, but I think that's what's going out right now.
Yeah, I got a question about activities at the ranch.
And we could even modify the website to put, you know, reserve cookout.
Right.
You know. I think that there's something on there to reserve cookout.
Well, all there is on there, I looked at it just yesterday, is just there's something on there if you kind of look in the right place that you can click on and find information about it. But on the main reservation where you're going down, what cabin do I want? Do I want linens? Do I want cookout?
Yeah,
right,
That would be the place where we would actually know, okay, this week, here's so-and-so's coming, and they've reserved cookout on Friday night.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think a flyer there and changing the website to add it are two things that we ought to push through.
Now, is Melinda still doing the website?
Yes.
The whole thing with activities, has it been promoted for people to come up with their snowmobiles or cross-country ski?
I don't necessarily think so.
Maybe.
I don't know that we've promoted.
we should
not,
promote
not
the,
for years.
The cross-country skiing is some people that come up. I mean, the shimps come up and they do that and they snowshoe. And I think Larry Sims has snowshoed into his place. But the shimps actually come out there and do it, you know, in different places around.
I just think it's great. I just think it's weird in the wintertime. Things just kind of shut down. I think if we promoted that it's a great kind of winter wonderland.
Sledding. We went sledding, but I couldn't exactly get to our
place. I'm not a fan of seeing these people in the summertime.
But you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Things kind of shut down come October. Why, you know, come out, bring your sleds.
Well, one of the things that is, you know, and Dale's talked about this for years, and it's kind of disturbing to me, and that is winter at Deer Springs is really nice.
Beautiful.
Now, I like it out there because, I mean, I you know, half-jokingly say, you know, there's no one there. I mean, it's pretty much, you have it to yourself. Well, you guys know. You guys come out and you're there. And I, honestly, I'm a winter person, and I, you know, I've dealt with the winter all my life, but I'm just blown away by those people who don't show up out there and just take advantage of what goes on. You know, they come out and they snowmobile and
we did our Olympic tubing run
last year. Exactly, and there's so many things out there for winter that would make it, you know, worthwhile, and I just don't think we market it hard enough for our, you know, the membership to get out there and do it.
One of the keys, however, the cabin can't freeze up. When they come home after a wild day out on snowmobiles, they want to, you know, have a drink of water.
Well,
I think that we've got a plan on that so that the cabins are usable and reliable and safe.
Well, they don't always have to stay either. They can do it like a day.
If they used it for day use, we could.
Yeah.
I mean, I have two pump pots that I can put boiling water in and put hot chocolate on the counter in the store. I mean, it doesn't have to be in a cabin somewhere. It could be in the store, and it's cold in there, but it's out of the weather. You could come in and have a cup of hot chocolate for 50 cents.
Yeah, but what Dale's talking about is reliability, and that's what we're after.
Oh, good.
But I just mean if it was days.
Yeah.
If they came up for days, there could be...
But, no, I just think we need to put a greater emphasis on making Deer Springs year-round, not just seasonal.
The last couple of weeks out there, I've kind of been good.
Yeah.
Despite really nice. Our water issues.
Speaking of which, this is an email I just... Bob Becker, photograph of his front gate, says, just got in. Thanks for Brent Ball and the support of the DSR board for the road and plowing to my gate. I had to walk in, but found my cabin to be in good working order. Plan to spend about a week, do some maintenance, and go over to Lee's place and feed the cats, check on the solar system. Weather's nice in the high 40s, around 17 or the low. But, I mean, to encourage and allow people to enjoy it, I think part of the one concern I have that's a road winter issue we need to decide is, and part of its budget this year and next year, you know, how far are we going to try to maintain road in the Meadow Canyon? But part of the problem is, I'm not the best snowmobiler. If nobody touches the road, you can snowmobile in and out. First person that makes ruts, you destroyed it. If we plow it, at which I'm not saying we shouldn't do, but we may start trying to think about road for automobiles, try to plow it, and a separate snowmobile path in those areas where, you can't take snowmobiles out through the trees and across the wash and stuff. And there's some sections of road from Broad Hollow to Meadow Canyon that we need to have some type of a place off the side of the road or something in the summer. We could smooth out a few things and maybe cut a couple of trees so that when there's 2 foot of snow, there's a nice snowmobile path like you find on Cedar Mountain and stuff that are not groomed trails, but it's only for snowmobiles that will make their path. And you're not spending the whole time being stuck and tipped over and stuff, dumping in and out of ruts.
Well, one of the things that Larry's done, especially north of the Broad Hollow area, And that actual Broad Hollow area is a real good place to stage your snowmobile. But one of the things that Larry's done in his plowing is he's left enough snow on the road that you can actually go on the road. But, and this Dale and I have discussed this, I think that we do need to do more ATV-type trails that parallel the roads, you know, so that an ATV doesn't necessarily have to be traveling on the road.
Especially major roads.
Well, wait, you're going to have a problem with your Title V if you do that.
Well, on our private property areas.
On private property areas, but then they could also serve as snowmobile routes. And so you don't have to, you know, keep going on and off the road. And if we do have to go on, and then that way where we do have to go onto the road, at those areas where we can't cut through monument or whatever, that we have a, you know, when we're doing the snow removal,
nice smooth inlet now.
We have a nice smooth inlet, and they can come in and they can go out or they can do whatever. But, you know, I mean, snowmobiling is a hoot. I mean, it's a lot of fun to do. And as long as you're not picking your snow machine up 150 times. But we have a resource here, and it's underutilized. And we're not taking advantage of it, or at least a whole bunch of the members who are not taking advantage of it. And maybe it's because they really don't think about using Deer Springs in the wintertime. And so promoting Deer Springs as a wintertime destination could be...
So maybe I'll plug that in I think we're going to do probably a January newsletter. Oh, I didn't even put that in my report about the newsletter that I did.
What about daily conditions? That's always an issue for our group, is knowing exactly what's here, short of calling.
It's on the website.
Calling someone.
Brent's pretty good about letting people know.
You can call us and ask us.
Yeah, if you had an email address at work.
Well, but it's the website has a daily condition thing on it.
For the ranch,
right?
Yeah. Ranch headquarters.
Yeah. There's the temperature of the ranch. Where's the actual site at?
You got our number, don't you?
I think it's the forecast.
I wonder where the broadcast point is.
Oh, I don't know.
Because if you go on there, I mean, there's a picture. I went on there yesterday.
It's 14 miles south of the ranch, and there's the other one that's north. And
what is that that's right by cabin 8? You drive down towards 6, 7, and 8, right to the right side.
That's the new network. That's the new Deer Springs Ranch computer network.
No.
That's the new computer network.
When I saw that the other day, I thought, well, is that a weather?
Yeah. No, that's the new computer network. You can sit in, if you have a wireless connection, you can sit in cabin 7 or 8, fire up your computer, and run off the ranch computer. You know, send and receive emails. And Vance Green he's invested $2,000 of his own money so far to get the test equipment up and running. It's working good. All the members who come out who have computers and want them to connect, they're really happy with what's going on here. And then what, you know, the plan down the road is to expand it, and for those people, one of the things that we ought to maybe talk about down the road is that if a member's coming out and they want to have access to the system, you know, we can upgrade the ranch star band to be much faster than it is and have much more capability. And if we're going to have a bunch of users on it, we're going to have to do that. But in order to fund that, we're going to, you know, I don't know if it's the ranch ought to fund it or if a user fee, you know, you come out to you and you're going to use your computer, you pay X number of dollars, and that provides you access and you get a password and you can get on there and the whole nine yards. So
I got a good example. The Shimps were just up there. They extended their stay 3 days, all because they can use their laptop.
And they actually made a telephone call from there using Skype and their computer.
Yeah.
So
one thing that I think as far as winter promotion is, we need to start submitting good pictures in, you know, when somebody's up there having a fun day, you know, to get some pictures to Nancy to put in the newsletter. And
so no pictures of me and you cursing while we're fixing the
house. Yeah, we're not having that.
Well, Dan, I think we've got to have an overall, and again, it's Paul, mainly you, but Brent on road stuff, an annual maintenance calendar just to remind us, April 1st we do this, and May 1st and fire up. In the fall, once cows are off in October, we usually want to keep all the gates closed to prevent neighbor cows from wandering through as other ranchers are, but somewhere November 1st, November 15th, I don't know when it is, but to go and open a bunch of those gates in the meadow so that when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground, it's not deep enough to snowmobile over the fences.
You
can't swing gates open in 2 feet of snow, and you can't dig through it and get off, and those of you that snowmobile, those have got to be opened up to allow and encourage snowmobile access through there.
Sure.
And but we got to have a reminder that somebody does that November 15th every year or something. So if we start building that calendar that's one thing that should, you know, go on there.
Right.
There's no way we could get them slide, can't
you? Did you guys try?
Yep.
Was that you guys?
Yep.
We were actually calculating the collective IQ of whoever tried that.
Prior to the last storm, somebody went up a ways.
Yeah, they did. They got up there pretty far.
Since the last storm, just I guess you went off just to the
in the first pile of snow.
Sagebrush clearing.
And then we just dragged our sleds down the road.
No.
We walked it. We just dragged people on their sleds.
Great.
You couldn't go in anywhere.
See, if you take pictures of what you do in the winter, you can get them.
You know, Shauna, you've been around Deer Springs your whole life, and I'm going to have to say this, and I hope you take it in the spirit in which it means tourist.
No, I had a Jeep that had bald tires on it.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Okay, we need to go back and talk about item 8B. You probably don't know what this is,
yes,
Shauna.
I don't know what that is.
Well, she'll remember. She's been.
Well, they've been here before. So how are you gonna charge them?
Well, they have a contract. I have the written letter. We agreed. The only problem is they haven't, as they're supposed to, at the end of 2009, give us a report and pay us whatever they use in order to be allowed 2010. They've just forgotten. But
so can you follow up?
Do you have a bill for them?
No, they're supposed to account. Their letter says how many dollars, $5 per person per trip through, and they know. They just need to say, and these days we brought, you know, we know at least twice they came through, and give us a check. They'll know what to do. They've just forgotten.
Is that something I need to log if I ever, when I see them?
I think that with our security system and knowing it, we shouldn't, but there won't be a problem or a fairness issue. It just slipped their mind, and it's the first year.
Sure.
Try to just call Tony or Lance and say, hey, you were supposed to make us a report and pay us some money.
I'd contact them to say we met at our board meeting and are talking about the 2010 season. And in order to permit you the 2010 season, we need to get an accounting for 2009.
So, you know, they've been compliant with...
Right, right. Todd. I think that.
That's Jack.
Okay. I've talked to them before, but
RV pads. We still need to kind of strategize some on that.
We talked a little bit about that. Are we going to have any funding to put one in?
Do they have
or
to
two?
Be cement? Can't they? Can we
no,
not
they
clear?
Don't have to
we
be
can
cement.
Clear spots, right?
Right.
Just make it.
We just need to have a way for them to dump.
We just need to make. We need to decide. Yeah, we need to just decide if we're going to try to make a nice area, for example.
Along the runway.
Past the runway, just on that little alcove down there.
That's what we talked about, where they have parking.
I think that's good.
That's a great spot right
and,
there.
But, you know, that means that we need to clean up lots of other things in that area. You know, but that, I think that
yeah,
is
but if you only put two
spot.
In there, you won't have to do a whole bunch. But just expand from there. Start with one
right.
or two.
Right.
And you have to mark them.
It doesn't have to be cemented. Oh, yeah. Then it shouldn't
no.
even
you
cost
just,
anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't cost us anything to make it. I mean, you could put...
We're not... I mean, in the beginning, we don't have a lot of money for this. But we need to have a plan so that we don't go dumping trash where we're going to build, you know, number one. And we start cleaning that up because we've kind of used that area as kind of a trash area. And
can we just call it RV pad? We put down the gravel and
what are you talking about?
At the end of the runway, down before you go down that hill, where the gravel pit is?
No, after you go down that hill.
You know where
oh, you're talking
at
the bottom of the hill?
Yeah.
You know where I brush hog all that
around.
Stuff? Remember that
oh, I was thinking
that
of the top of the
just
hill.
Right back over
or you
there.
Drop down.
I think would be a great spot.
Was it down to the right?
Uh-huh. Speaking of the slash pile, I...
We have a dump trailer that headquarters...
No, we're talking about for the
sewer
tanks. RV.
Oh.
Sewer, we got to have something
that's
to dump
in. No, but we'd have to probably look at building that.
We have to think it's put in a septic system and a dump hookup.
Yeah.
And
so
then gravel.
We need to decide a dump station location and... But... We're not going to decide that in this meeting, but we need to start planning so when it's March, we know what we're doing.
I'll
so
be out there and we'll go down and look at that.
What I would encourage you, Sean, is to kind of think through that a little bit. And we need an RV dump plus water station somewhere.
Well, if he's going to put a blow pipe, I mean standpipe by the water tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said you had an extra
you were thinking about putting that extra tank by the water tank, so in case of emergency, you could always fill that for the RVs, just, you know, so it doesn't have as much pressure. You may be able to just add a standpipe to that. They could fill.
Yeah.
There's a water right there. Spigot right by, or a hydrant by the 40,000 gallon tank, but I don't.
She's talking about the new standpipe that you that Brent wants to put where in. This T is that blew out. And, you know, we could put a leach-filled and septic tank there or something. But somewhere in this water supplies, I'm just suggesting right now is the time to kind of think through things so that, you know, with a little bit of extra effort, we did that while we were doing something else.
Well, I'm kind of along the mindset of fixing what we have and, you know, not building something new. Is there a big need for RV?
Just a couple.
I think it's something that we could explore. It's a possibility of an additional revenue source.
And then instead of somebody storing their trailer out in the field until whenever, you can rent the RV space for an indefinite amount of time and have your trailer there and come up and stay in it if you want to before you go to your property.
I don't know. We've talked about it for years. I think we ought to at least get some limited experience with it with not much investment.
I mean, if they come in, swing by the ranch house, fill up there, and then go and park. I've been to RV places where they didn't have a dump station. There's a dump station in Kanab.
Well, you know, Bob Becker, before he had a septic in, he had one of those mobile dump stations, like they have, you know, you'll see people in the dry camps have for their campers. And, you know, we still have, Vance and I found it with his sewer cam, which I just love. I love that sewer cam thing. But it's down there at the headquarters. There's a stub out where we can make a connection in back, go in, you know, where they could dump. That'll go into the, it's either the store,
the comfort station, right, exactly.
That we could use, they could use that as a dump station, and all we have to do is expose that and make it.
That
so
would
it was,
probably be a good idea.
Fill up with water. No.
They could fill with water.
That and eventually get one on site, but we need one up there because if you're up there for long enough,
you emptied your fresh water
and you filled the gray water and the black water, and you try to drive down that road, you're going to wreck your vehicle because the weight on
your tank.
It's not good. I've taken my trailer in and out every year the last couple of years, and you got to dump somewhere up there and get that weight off of the equipment.
On the way out.
I didn't say that.
I usually use lot 73, is it?
Okay, so, Sean, I'd encourage you to maybe get some planning efforts together there. Outside of the board meeting. Other reservation fees, I wanted to discuss a couple of things that I've analyzed. And I have a couple of proposals. I have some of these laundry expense analysis to look at. Pass these out over that way and over that way. Maybe I gave
what was the phone again?
In kind of working through the reservation process and looking at that, I have two or three observations I'd like to make. And these are maybe bold observations. Observation number one is, in my opinion, our website is pretty darn functional, and I'm not sure that we're going to get a whole lot better in any kind of a price range than what we have. And so I kind of hear these generic complaints about, you know, the website needing to be better, yada, yada, yada. And number one, the problems that I think we have are things that it wouldn't matter who hosted it, who did it, whatever. If we've got, you know, out-of-date policies still on there from 4 years ago or something that doesn't make sense on there, that, you know, no website hoster is going to fix those problems for us. We have to fix those on ourselves. But what I would suggest to all board members and members alike, I need to hear more specifics about what is not working for somebody. For example, if the specific is, I just don't like that I have to get on the internet to look at something. Well, that's not going to be fixed by us putting $2,000 of effort into a new website. You know, so I don't know in any specifics that cannot be addressed within the framework of our existing system with no extra cost to us if we will just take care of those things. But there are a couple of policy issues that I would like to bring up and discuss that are causing a little bit of concern. And I would just suggest to board members, if you have or you hear somebody that's dissatisfied with how a cabin reservation got made or what happened, please seek out the details in that conversation and or get that person to me or something so that we're actually working on a real problem instead of a ghost.
Of generic.
You know, I
want any member to do that?
What's that?
You want any member to do
yes.
that?
Yeah, if anybody has a complaint, any member out there, let's hear it. But what I don't want to hear is I just don't like the whole system. What don't you like about it? You know, on this page of the website, I don't like the fact that you can't see this. Okay. Now, that's something that I can tell Melinda about, and we can modify it.
Well, for example, in our meeting today, you know, because we discussed it some with Brayton's, there's a glitch in there somehow. Shimps just came up. Turley's. Using in there, they put in, we're bringing 2 adults and 8 kids, total of 10 people. It tells them we have 10 adults and 10 children. Well, there ain't 20 people coming, and so there's still a little programming we need to
but
look
that's
into.
Not Linda's, it's not Linda, it's something in.
There's a glitch somewhere.
It's something in the.
Okay, that's a perfect
trail.
Example that if we know, here's this example, we can easily tell Melinda, here's this example. And my guess is she can troubleshoot through and 100% fix that. So I don't want to continue to live with these problems. I want them brought forward with enough detail that somebody can email me something that I can pass on, that I can then, you know,
will you put that on
our
list and
email Melinda and say it makes this noise and I'll fix it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the exact same thing as taking your car to the auto mechanic and saying, I don't like this car. You know?
Fix it.
If you because we didn't email with Melinda at Carbon Copy Dirk, you know, explain exactly on that recent example
and,
so she
and
can look into it.
The exact reservation it was, so she can backtrace that and make it happen. That's a great one.
Another one is cabin availability. Looking online, what's available, trying to schedule it, being told no, it's not available.
That's frustrating.
Last time we were here, it was compounded because the people that were with us wanted to stay, didn't want to stay. But anyway, it was very frustrating, and I'm probably not the brightest apple in the bunch, but I did my homework. I knew what was available according to the website. Then Linda said, no, I don't know why you did that. You said, I don't know why you scheduled it if it wasn't available. Those kind of things just... And I love being there anyway, regardless of all of the drama. But some people that were in our group said, you know what, somebody needs to get their act together because they checked online and what was said was
available. It's a website issue. And Linda and I went through this, I don't know when it was, but the only way that we found out that there is a problem with it is because she went in and specifically double-booked a cabin on purpose. She went in and put, you know, whatever cabin it was, put in someone's name on that day in that cabin, and it allowed her to do that. And it's not supposed to, and she didn't think it could do that. And that may have been already resolved.
I think she dogged that one down, but that's a good issue.
But we didn't know that it could do that.
Right.
She knew that the system...
But our system is going to be as good as it is that we take these specifics and we flesh every one of them through.
And that was around that time. Yeah. That happened because she found out, I think, in trying to correct that when I was, we were on the phone, and she said, "You just let me double book that cabin."
There are a couple of things that I'd like to discuss here. One is there's a reservation fee difference in between if the member books it versus our guest. And in reality, that's not being charged and it's unmanageable. So I would propose that we eliminate the fee difference. So, for example, if I want my sister and their family to use my cabin time, in theory it should cost more. But, however, if I make the reservation, it doesn't cost more. But if she makes the reservation, it does cost more, in theory. But, in fact, there's no way to charge that up front or to really, it's not built into the system. So we have something written on the policy page that we're not, in fact, doing. And personally, I think it's unfair. If my cousin is going to use my time this year, I don't think my cousin should have to pay more than I do. And
I
so
agree. You gave it to him.
I think that needs to be, you know, standardized. Jody?
And I think that's right on key as far as, like, if it's your cousin, but then maybe you should book the dates for them. But I think if it's an outside people that heard about the rants that come out, they should probably pay extra because boy, we're not making a lot of money off of it.
And they do.
They do.
That's a whole separate
thing.
Right. So I'm just talking about booking members
and guests of members.
Okay.
And so I would propose that we change that and ask if that's acceptable. I'll make that in the form of a motion.
I'll second that motion.
I'm in favor of it.
All in favor.
Aye.
Okay, second issue, and I don't really have a discussion on it, and it's more complicated. Is linen fees. So I had this analysis, and let me just tell you kind of my perspective going into this as somebody who didn't know anything, but somebody who has on occasion swore never to go in a cabin with their family again.
Didn't you come this year?
Yeah. No, I didn't. But.
Oh, you just came and had your.
This was years ago that I made that.
Cabins
comment.
Open now.
Cabins, I think, are better now. At least the cabins I've seen inside look better than they have in years. And so I'm not making that comment in regards to today. So, but there have been times that I've been up there with my family and said, and my wife has said, this is the last time. But one thing that kind of bothered me was this linen fees. So I went back and analyzed, roughly about 20% of the people are requesting linens. You know, we have the option. You bring your own linens, you request and pay for linens. Should be the two options, right? But in reality, what's happening is they're not bringing linens and they're not getting linens either. So we're using our beds without linens. Sometimes they're bringing sleeping bags. Sometimes they're, and it just kind of makes, I don't think that's a good policy. So we're saving money by doing it. So when I first started looking at this, talking to Linda about it, I thought, hey, I just don't like this. I think everything should have linens. That should just be the way it should be. And she said, well, it's going to cost a lot more than you think. And I initially said, we're not hiring more employees because of it. You know, I don't know if I buy that. And then she kind of rehearsed with me, well, we used to have a lot more laundry fees. We have to pay, you know, more laundering because there's not adequate laundering there and all that. So I had her do this analysis here, which was very helpful to look at. This shows that for the last 7, 8 years, the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, these are years that we provided linens, 2002 through 2007. So you can see what the cost of laundry expense was. So kind of from 1,800 at the lowest to 3,400 at the highest. So, you know, more money than I would have thought, but there's the reality. in 2008, you can see that our linen fees, the very first number is the amount of money that we collected. Excuse me.
The cost.
Okay, so the very first number is the cost. The second number is the money we collected. So you can see our linen charge went down to, in both of these years, about $1,000. And when I go through the bookings and add up, it went from $3,000 to $1,000, roughly because only a third of the people are using linens. So it was a fairly direct correlation, yes.
The number also, the 936, there's only 21 linen rentals in that, and it was that high because we were still using we were having someone else do the laundry.
Right.
I didn't start doing laundry until, I don't know, sometime in August or something, or September
of
maybe.
Of which year?
Of 2008.
Okay.
The first year we were here.
So, in any case,
what she's saying, that's why the expense in 2008
is as
almost the same, and you went from 105 rentals to 168 rentals.
Yeah, when it's almost, you know, another third more. So, good point. And then it shows the amount that we collected in revenue. So, in 2008, it cost us $141. Versus if you look at the previous 6 years, you could say, hey, that was a big reduction in our expense to the ranch. In 2009, we actually made $420 on it. Again, not really considering people's time. You know, this
but
is...
But it's my job.
Right, it's your job. So if we said... I had another theory, which was, why don't we increase the reservation fee a slight amount and make linens available on all of the beds? That's just, you know, the way it should be, in my theory. Well, if our linen cost was around, say, the $3,500 towards the highest end of this, we'd have to almost add another $25 per... So we'd have to take our reservation fee from 25 to 50 in order to make that something as a standard service, which is still maybe just a little bit cheaper than our current linen-only fee. And obviously, if we made it a standard service, we should be able to do it for less than if it was a custom thing. But I don't know quite where to go with this, and so I bring these facts less as a, hey, this is what I think should happen, but more as a I have some discomfort about the fact that in reality we're having a lot of beds used without linens, and I don't think that's good, and I don't think it certainly doesn't give me the same feeling about going up there next week when the last 6 weeks have been used without linens, and from talking around and everything I can tell, it wasn't because people carefully folded up their linens before they came to the ranch and put their own linens on the bed.
They didn't.
Yeah.
And you were on the mattress.
For people that are coming up and not using,
yes,
not their own linens.
Yes.
And you were on the mattress.
Let me make, because we talked about that. I
don't want to name names, but
about a third of the people are getting linens. The other two thirds, theoretically, are bringing their own. I guarantee that at least half of those show up late, sweaty, dirty, tired, and crawl into a bed somewhere under a sleeping bag.
I don't even. Do
so
that
that's the
bed.
Fact. Now, just so that you know, since we talked, right, these things I did learn that helped me at least understand a little bit. Even though we don't provide linens, the beds do always have mattress pads, so it's not soiling directly on the mattress, which was a concern. You know, I went over with Nancy. Secondly, I had a concern. These costs for linens is quarters in a laundry mat, basically, not gas, fuelage, mileage, Nancy's time, and the commitment of resources there.
Well, but
and I was
Coleman's
concerned
too a lot of these
true
years.
But I went over with Nancy today and said, if we doubled the use of linen, it was mandatory, so
it would actually triple, and we doubled the amount of cabin use by making the reservation more user-friendly. We got back to a lot more cabin use. Can we handle that much linen? And she's still saying, I could still do it in one day a week. It would be a long day. It now already is, but the way she's going to the Fredonia laundromat now, and she dominates and fills every machine and rotates through, she could still do it without taking 2 days a week or doubling that, which, again, just needs to be thrown in the mix as making that decision.
I think a nice compromise, I mean, I wouldn't feel bad at all to say, hey, we're going to increase fees from 25 to 35, but linens is a standard service, you know, and then kind of see at the end of the year, were we able to kind of stay within, you know, that $10, how far did it go, or, you know, wow, we spent an extra, you know, $1,000 that we didn't cover. It's not going to be that big of an issue in our overall scheme, but I think to have the cleanliness of the beds and know, you know, that the previous week's use were something that I don't have to feel like, in addition to bringing my own linens, I'm going to bring my own blankets and everything else, too.
And Lysol,
yeah.
I
don't think it's a good thing.
Let's make a motion.
Okay.
I would like to make the motion that we up the fee. I don't know if it takes the $50 or whatever.
Well, let's make a motion. I would suggest $35 as a test run for this year.
Okay,
because I don't want to get too many people
upset.
Well, it's not just a motion to raise the fee. It's a motion to raise the fee
and include the linens.
Include right. Linens with every...
Because of the safety of our customer.
Yeah.
The health issue. I mean, that's not even... Anyway.
And as a member that just loves coming to the cabin, just my input is, you know, we charge way too cheap for those cabins anyway. $25 is a steal.
So
I stay 35. For a week.
Yeah, and I'm thinking 50 is not even
yeah, that's right. If it was $50 a mandatory for a week, some that come for one day is one thing, but for an entire, you know, the change of linen and a whole week.
I feel uncomfortable getting clear to 50 because
yeah,
I know
we're 35 and test it, like you said.
What has been the linen fee? 30.
It's 30 or 50 depending on the cabin.
So we've had a 25 reservation fee and a 30 linen.
So it's 55 if you choose linens or 25 if you don't.
Okay, but what if you did, okay, 30, that's what he's saying, 35. But if you did 35 for
everything.
The smaller cabins and
45
and 45 or 50 for the three larger cabins.
Yeah. You can't
because there's more.
Because there's a big difference between the amount of linens used in cabin 4 versus the garden cabin.
Right.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, there you go.
How's everybody feel about that?
Let's do that.
Motion aside.
Okay.
I'm opposed to raising the fee. We usually come for a week, and we never stay for a week. I don't know what the percentage of people are that
come and stay a whole week.
Come and stay a whole week, which is very different. And I don't know that people that we know, we understand, people that we bring, are. It's very clear to them, there won't be linen, so bring your own. Everyone does, or if they didn't, we have enough to loan them. That's always an issue. I do not want to raise the fees. I didn't want to pay the registration fee when it started, just because it's one more. And I understand there's a user fee. There are owners that don't use the cabins versus those of us that do. So I understand there's a user fee, and there's some legitimacy to that, of course. But could there still be an option of no fee, provide your own, versus just across the board everybody pays whether or not they stay a day or a week?
That's the question. Are they going to bring their own horse meat that people say they don't want linens and they come without their own?
Well, let me ask you, because, again, Davy Turley and you that you know, know you're in, you stay in the same cabins, you have your favorite cabin. If I went up there, you know, how many people are going to say, what linens do I bring? What size of beds? Do I go on the website and spend an hour reading? Okay, now I got two twins and one. And I don't want to encourage
right.
that. I don't want to encourage any phone
Or I have people that email also. And
you know,
ask
some
people
of them.
Queen size or king size, and it covers all of them.
Well, and that's true. I mean,
I just carry a whole bucket of queen size and king size, and that covers everything. And
well, you're just raising the fee to cover the cost of the
laundry.
Right.
Basically.
And if it's a service we provide at the ranch, we should get money back in the bank for it.
Well, and also, I mean, are we making the beds or are we setting the linens there? So if people feel uncomfortable with sleeping on the mattress,
they
could cover it.
I think you need to make the beds, personally.
Make the bed?
Yeah. I think linen fees.
It was nice when they were made.
Yeah, I remember the days when the beds were made.
But it was also a full-time job, I think.
It is.
I think that's a bigger, more significant issue and time commitment and stuff, whether they're mandatory making the beds or not making the beds. And, you know, again, now that Nancy's in charge of that, you
if
know,
she has somebody to help her.
We put chocolates on the pillow, too?
Yeah. And a little, you know, feedback.
Yeah.
If you don't make the beds now, these people that are too, whatever it is, that they won't.
I don't think they'll make the beds even.
The bed
right.
Either. Right.
But then you wash the mattress cover. I mean, if that comes down to the issue, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know how we can tell.
We could wash the mattress covers. We could cover the mattresses with, you know, with the plastic cover under the mattress pad if we wanted to do that. I can wipe it down. That takes
$5
or something.
In general, the whole industry is changing. Dale could probably say, in the hotel industry, as I travel around, there's a different expectation.
Well, it's not only that.
Of beds and. What's going on with them nowadays?
It's not only
than
that.
There was 10 years ago.
In the last 5 years, and I don't know if they've even experienced here, and it's been an issue. I've served now for 6 years on Kane County Travel Council. With the increase of European travel the last 5 years, and I, you know, not to blame it, but bed bugs is an issue in Kane County, and it is nationwide. That wasn't here even 5 years ago, and so you know, there's been investigative reports on television. You go into the nicest Marriott's or Hilton's and spread back the beds and bed bugs in mattresses is becoming a thing that people get paranoid. And as we get more, you know, maybe not non-member users and international, again, it doesn't matter. Now it's in the United States that's been in Europe for 50 years is now here. And so
we have to call you back.
I don't know how paranoid we need to be over it, but
do plastic covers
my question
that,
is,
yes.
Yes.
No. My question
under,
is,
they go under it. They go in the seams and they go under. They'll get in there.
Yeah, it's down the crack of the braided bed
mattress.
Around
right,
the
right. But if you have a plastic cover,
yeah,
over the entire mattress, you know, a
well,
zipper cover. I mean, not that they can't get
through.
Are they going to die? They're
I don't
gonna,
know.
Well, they're in. They're in, and they don't get back
dead
out
for 7 years.
Well,
my question
is totally dead, dormant for 7 years and still come back out.
My question is, for out of 10 cabins that we have, and if we're going to try to get, you know, more enjoyment, more usage, more benefit to the members, will we get more usage by, you know, we're going to scare off more people by charging 10, 15 bucks extra than we're going to pick up from those that won't go to the cabins now because of bad experience or paranoia or thinking that they're unhealthy and, you know, they're just not going to sleep in a bed. And if they said, oh, hey, if I knew that everybody else is using linens, then I'll, you know, I mean, which way would we get more use? Because either way, it's going to scare some off or discourage some. If you raise fees, it'll discourage some. And I don't know the answer.
Sir, I think the there's some unrest in the. I think your study has triggered some new thoughts on this. And I think for us to penalize the people who are using the ranch, which are the cabin things, that's moving in the wrong direction. Our thought was to encourage more use, more enjoyment out of the ranch. And I think you need to look a lot deeper. If we talk about $4,000 for linen and $4,000 for reservation fees, that's not raising very much money. And let me ask you a couple of questions. Nancy, how much of your time would you say a percentage has to do with people who use cabins?
How much of my time has to do with them?
Hmm.
That's what I do in the summer.
That's kind of what you do.
Right.
Paul, how much of the time of yours is actually dealing with people who use cabins?
Quite a bit. At least half of my time.
Half of your time? How about Linda? How much of Linda's time is used in membership use of cabins?
A lot of time.
75%?
Yeah.
If you look at those, and if you look at the other things, the utilities that plays a part, in addition to laundry, so laundry and reservation fees, and the money we raise on Linda saying that reservation fee helps pay for supplies and cabins.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at those different factors, and if some of the people do not use their cabin time, they're paying something like $130. I ran some numbers since I talked with some of you here a few days ago. By a member not using their cabin time and impacting your schedule, Linda's and everybody, they're paying about $130 in their fee and not using the cabins. That's a lot different than to charge somebody another $15 for coming. And I'd like to see kind of a study done on the expense, because I think we need to encourage more people to use the ranch like they used to years ago. And so to not increase fees that will have that effect, but to do things that keeps the cabins clean and safe and healthy, I think sometimes we're listening to the wrong input. The board should say, what is the ideal? I don't need input or bias from anybody, but this is what we should do health-wise. This is what we should do as a practical. And I think there's no question that when you go into a motel, you don't expect to make the beds, or you don't expect to do this and that. This is an accommodation, and whether it's members or whether it's not members, I think the overall fee in the timeshare world, which is billions of dollars worth, if I don't use my week in a timeshare program, they don't give me a dime reduction. But they have it scheduled so that I don't have to pay additional if I modify it a little bit one way or the other, like our rules are today. So I think to have the fee that's paid kind of cover, you know, do we pay extra for fish or do we, is that included in our annual budget? And I think that the linens and the laundry and even the reservation fee should really be a part that is shared by 300 members, instead of saying, no, we're going to load this on the 50 members who came and used the cabins. Those 50 members are going to have to step up and keep things clean and better for the other 250 that didn't come this year. But next year they're going to come and they're going to want it to be nice. But they didn't keep it and maintained because we're putting the load on the 50 families who came this year or next year. So I really think that the whole industry means that you should still treat people economically basically the same. And if you're going to do something, not raise the price $25 on the few families that come, but maybe raise all the members $5 and get rid of, you know, some of the nickels and dimes that caused so much problems a few years back.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Dale, at all. I think that I look at Deer Springs probably maybe a little differently than most people do. I see us as a community. And any community, you know, I can tell you just from 27 years of experience, I had people that I went on medical calls over 100 times. They overused the system. Overused the system. And then there was people that I never saw, okay, who were paying their taxes and whatever. I have no problem with that. And I think one of the things that we need to look at, is actually twofold. One is, we can't keep absorbing increases in energy costs. And by that I mean, okay, you have somebody comes in and uses the cabin, propane is going, costs us more, because we have to pump our water, it costs us, in fuel to pump our water. And we have to look at that stuff from a reasonable perspective. And my thing is and we've talked about this before, and I see our annual dues as a tax, just like property tax or anything else. And I see us as having one of two choices, and maybe I live in the not quite so bright apple world. I see it as pretty simplified stuff. I see it as we either do something to increase the revenues, either overall by coming up with a way to make Deer Springs attractive to have outsiders pay, or we come up with a way that the members who do use things pay. I myself personally, I don't want to see us do it, and we talked about this extensively, I don't want to see us have an increase in dues. Because, quite honestly, you'd be impacted more than anyone else.
I thought.
Okay. That would be, and I've talked to members who own multiple lots, and they're concerned about the dues continually going up because it could reach a breakover point where they can no longer afford that. Okay. So, from my perspective, I don't use the cabins. Never slept in one. Don't have any plans to. I give my weeks away every year on average. I really don't care, but there are a lot of members who do use the cabins. Dave's a good example. The Shimps really enjoy the cabins. The Shimps are two people who would pay more. They're willing to pay more. And my way I think that we ought to look at this thing is we ought to study this thing and say to ourselves, okay, who would be willing to pay more to do this? Or do we want to come back and do this, revisit this thing as a service to the ranch? If you're not a member, or if you're a member who doesn't use, you don't get a refund.
Okay, let's do this. I agree with you, Brent. I think what you're saying is right. Then let's just, and Dave, there's a compromise, probably, but Dave doesn't want to pay more. He brings his linens. Maybe we should, I don't know how you can double check them, but maybe when they come in to check in, make sure they have
linens. Show your linens.
There's a lot of people that show up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, if you get there and they haven't used the linen,
it's got to be simple.
Here's what I see.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I don't know how long ago it was, everybody was complaining about a nice water system, a nice culinary water system. So the ranch is spent however thousands of dollars to make a nice water system. We have that now. People are complaining about cleanliness of the mattresses. I think the ranch should eat the cost and make it clean for the members. If that's what the members want, that's what the members get.
Do you remember complaining about the cleanliness of mattresses? I wondered if that's that. My wife, for example, wouldn't be the one that would come in late at 2 in the morning. She's going to make the bed.
Right.
She does it every time. Right. And she wouldn't sleep in there. She does it. I don't know how many. I don't know if we know. But
I don't
complaining about dirty mattresses.
No. If it's $1,000 extra,
no,
because
they
see
all have clean mattress pads on there.
Well, we've just recently gone through, put in new bed frames, put in new stuff, and I just think that's the time to start making the beds. Some of the beds were hard to make because they weren't even on a frame.
So they should be, most of them should be on frames.
Well, that's where I think we've got two issues. One, can we agree on what is best for the ranch? And then two, how to pay for it. But whether the users pay or for all the members to pay either way, I don't know that that makes a difference whether we should provide linens or not.
Because we've heard,
I think they need linens.
I think for sanitary conditions, I think, for sanitary reasons, I think we should just do it. That's just my opinion. I mean, it's more work for us, but it's not.
Well, when you talk about the water system costs us a lot of money.
Right.
And the users and the non-users
all pay for it.
Pay it the same.
Right.
And I think the same thing is true with most of the, if I don't use a cabin this year, but I want it kept nice so I can use it next year.
Right.
And I really think that the idea of...
Well, let's look at a couple of proposals. And I personally don't want to send this off to another study because I don't think we're going to talk about it and find out any more strategies than we have right here.
Can I make a point real quick before you...
I'm not going to discount points. I'm just saying we need to start to get our conversations into who likes option B,
right.
Who likes option C, who likes option A.
If you don't charge, though, for these things, we already have in our budget, the budget that's been approved and what we're going to do next year, we already have the amount of money that ought, an estimated amount that's coming in for reservation fees, an estimated amount that's coming in for laundry fees, and what's going out in those areas. And if you take the fees away,
we'll have to do something that works within the budget. So let me make some suggestions. Option A, I'm not going to suggest right now, and we don't have the budget to make it work, to take the reservation fee out altogether. Option A, reservation fee stays $25. Linen fees stay as they are. Okay? I think that's where we're at the moment. That's safe. Leave some of us feeling like cootie bugs are coming, but that's safe.
But we could
okay? Option, no bugs yet. Let me get some options out. Option B is that we charge $45, and we know that that will cover the budget to everything. Okay? So we know from the analysis, $20 extra added, that's going to cover it. And given the efficiencies of using the Fredonia laundromat, blah, 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 we may even come out just a little bit ahead. Option C would be maybe some kind of a hybrid where we say we raise it to $35, knowing that maybe we won't quite cover it, but if the ranch overall supplements $1,000 towards linen or $1,500, worst case scenario, it's not going to sink too many ships. Those are at least three options, to consider. Can we have some format around maybe, would anybody say, is there some other option we ought to throw up there? Jody?
Maybe option D would be charge $45 flat fee for the larger.
The larger.
And $35
flat fee. In fact, let's modify option B to that.
$45.
Larger cabins are $45 and smaller cabins are $35. Okay, that sounds like it. Everybody agree that's a good modification?
Yeah.
Because those three larger cabins.
Yeah.
Dale?
I don't see any laundry income in the budget. There is a reservation fee.
There's no laundry income in there now.
What?
Oh,
I thought there was a
laundry.
No, there's no laundry income.
It could be combined with something else, but we know we're anticipating receiving it. As we built this all from last year's
It's right there.
Expense or income?
And based on that argument, Dale, you'd be saying, hey, let's just do it and not charge for it. Are there any other proposals than those three?
So D would be.
Yes.
Sir, why couldn't, when you do the statement that you send every December, for the membership fee, have it set up where, you can pay this fee if you're not going to be using the cabin any time of the year, but if you know you're going to be using the cabin, then this is what it'll be.
Right.
That's
what the reservation fee already does.
But that would be ahead. That would go right in with the other $400.
Right. And I'm not willing to go that so far for this year because we've already sent out all the bills. And that would be maybe a strategy to say, hey, fees could go down to $350 for those of you who are not going to use the cabins, and they'll be $550 for those of you that are going to use the cabins.
See, and two, at the end of that, you know, if they decide they're going to come, then there can be an extra $25 or $50 fee that they'd have to pay because,
right,
because of the way they did it.
Right. I'm personally not willing to entertain that for this year because I can't imagine any way that the budget will work for it. But I think that could be a discussion for future years.
But that's still a point of how and when we charge it. We got to decide, are we going to charge it or not first, and then...
Right.
Let me ask one question because it makes a difference in my mind on some of this. Right now, if somebody leaves the cabins dirty, we charge them a $50 cleaning ding fee
or more.
But I don't think that's been charged.
That has a few times.
It has a few times, but I would say they've been the extreme cases.
It's when they're yucky. I mean, there's been times somebody, like, pooped in the toilet and didn't even flush it and left the floor. I mean, there was mud on the floor. Not someone walked across to put the mop away. There was mud.
Isn't that another discussion?
No, because it's still, if we're trying to cover budget, if we don't need to cover budget, we don't need to discuss any of this, include everything.
Right.
If we're trying to make decisions, one thing I am in favor of is encouraging that to be a $100 fee and charge it a little more often and penalize those that do create a little more wear and tear and stuff and help to subsidize the budget. Last time I think we did $50 four times. There's $200 income, if I'm correct. I think that we could have had $500 income, and those members that are that, you know, teach them a lesson, or if they're non-members or whatever, they should help to cover some of the budget, to help make up some of the shortfall so that we could justify in
Do you feel that there are times that maybe you should have said, hey...
There's only one time that I know that I could have said something, but I knew the situation...
The dog peed on the bed? That one?
No, I think we charged for that one. When the roof leaked
the
bed in a perfect yellow circle. Yep.
The downstairs roof.
And the dog prints around the bed.
Was it their sheets or our sheets?
It's a mattress pad.
I won't tell you what, Cap.
I'm replacing
Okay.
We at least need to rotate all mattresses annually for cabin to cabin so that I feel okay.
So that cabin will actually have new mattresses.
Do we launder the mattress pads occasionally?
Yes. If they look good, she reuses them. If she doesn't, they still get washed every 2-3 times.
Okay.
I mean, those cabins are clean. I wish you guys would come up.
I will.
They're remarkably clean. And let me just give you one other thing to think about. This is not going to happen under Paul and Nancy's watch, but we had a couple of managers back who were there, and they would go in, and she would look at the mattress, you know, the linen that was still on the bed, because they're supposed to strip it, but, you know, she'd tell them, oh, maybe do, maybe don't, whatever. She'd go in and look. The bed had been slept in, but it looked okay. She just remained bad. So, you know, that's not going to happen to these guys. But
I'm trying to, let me be honest myself.
Is there a grease pencil for that board back?
Am I a paranoid of the cleanliness? And, have I heard a lot? You know, I haven't had that as much as I'll tell you. My wife has, I haven't stayed in the cabin for 5 years.
The front desk has
one, because last time I stayed in cabin number one, we slept on top of each other, not in any kind of a good way. If you put a 2x4 across the bed, there was at least a 4-inch belly in it, you know. And you just, you know, I had to spend more money on the chiropractor the next 3 weeks to walk again.
Right.
That I think that we've resolved. And secondly, some of the fees, whether it's a real financial issue or just somewhat of a salt in the wounds irritant, that I think a lot of members, once that has been instituted, hasn't done. But now that it's been there, we got to think long and hard before we, you know, take it out and go back to saying, now how are we going to balance the budget and put it back in play or something?
I don't know what the difference is between what we budgeted and if we end up just doing it.
Well, look at the actual reservation fees collected last year. They were like 4,000 some odd, I believe. It's on the profit and loss.
And that, you know, see, I see that as money that, you know, helps offset the programming costs, those kind of things.
46.
So I think
that's
honestly
a big enough ticket item. I'm not sure we can take it off, but
I think if we just leave everything the same, but just include it, and the ranch we'll just eats it. I don't know if it's 1,000 or 2,000 extra. But we're providing a service that everybody can agree is needed.
It's about, on an average, about $2,500,
$2,600. Yeah. See, my basic thought is this, all right? If I go into a, if I come into a hotel or and I say, like, I'd like a suite, it costs me more, right? Okay? If I just want a regular room, one bed, one person, it costs me so much money. You know, in any hotel I've ever stayed in, you know, they charge you for more people in the room because it takes more work, you know, regardless. If you upgrade the room, it costs you more money. I, myself, personally, I never thought about the bed bug issue. Thank you very much. Now I'm here in a hotel and I'm going marching down the hall. But my thing is that I think that maybe if this linen thing is a problem, and it won't be a problem for Nancy in relation to doing the linen, is maybe we ought to just drop that linen fee, do the 45. I mean, I'm kind of in favor of the $45 for the big cabins, $35 for the small cabins, provide the linens, and go from there. That's just my opinion.
I mean, it's $10 to $20 more.
That's, you know, proposal B, okay? I would imagine it writing written back there on the grease board.
What do you think, how would you think your wife would feel about paying $10 to have five beds already made?
She doesn't pay it, I pay it.
Oh.
But we're back to the same issue of spending a Friday night coming home Saturday, so we're only there one night.
But in that same respect, whether you're there for that Friday night to Saturday night or Friday night to Friday night, I still got to go in and change the linen. They still have to be washed. I'm not going to let the next people come in and sleep in your bed.
That could be $5.
Or we sell the sheets on eBay. Turley slept here.
Worked out on what we call the point system, because it's different if I stay in cabin 4 or I stay in the garden cabin.
Right.
Some of our management came along and said, oh, all cabins are the same. So you can either stay in the garden cabin or you can stay in cabin 4 because we're going to charge you for one cabin on your entire
right.
two cabins.
And for 15 or 20 years, it was all a point system where you paid.
And it was fair. You could work out through a point system. And your points, you got so many points, you could either use it for linen or you could use it for horses or you could use it for fish. Or you could use it for a big cabin or two little cabins. But the flexibility then was, like Robert said, it's up to the individual. It has to be simple enough so that it can be managed. But we managed it several years on a point system basis. Mm-hmm. And people, the member got to make the decision, this is how I want to spend my points. I paid the annual fee. I'm entitled to certain points. I then will use them as I see fit. Mm-hmm. And that could be reinstituted again that would give fairness, because all of us would agree that a person who uses cabin 4 or cabin 6 for 2 weeks and a cabin who uses the garden cabin or cabin 1 for 2 weeks are not being treated equally. So there was a point system that averaged those things out, and the member could select and set their own face and really felt good. But it was the management said, oh, I don't like to do the math.
Well, the points don't generate revenue either.
It did generate revenue.
We didn't pay for those points.
Could you buy more
points? That's right. You got 435 points when you paid your food.
Yeah, but that's the same as the dues. If we were to do that now, it wouldn't pay for the laundry, and it wouldn't pay. So it wouldn't generate the extra money needed right now for the cabins and supplies and the linen.
No, but what it does, and I'm not sure that we could do it this year anyway. It would divide out a Brent Fulmer that says I'm not using any linens. I'll use my points in some snow removal and feel like I'm getting something for my assessment, versus a David Turley who says I'm going to take a couple, some extra cabins and feel like it was a way that people felt like they were getting something for their annual dues. Where right now, both are unhappy. The residents that don't use cabins are a little bit unhappy, and the cabin users who see road grader fees and fuel are a little unhappy. And people could kind of, justify out what they were using, and it all comes out in the wash in the end.
And we have three people here right now that use cabins every year. So if you try to listen to their, and I mean, they religiously use the cabin time. And some of them use it over their time. I mean, more time than what they have coming or whatever. You could ask their opinions also of the reservation fee. I mean, individually, because they use the time. You guys don't use the time, right? I mean, I like the point system. I'm not putting the point system down.
Well, but like you said, it won't work this year. We need to make a decision and go through 2010. It is something to consider.
But these are people that use it. We know Dave's opinion on it, that he should... But what do you think about it?
I think, I'm always... I'm of the opinion that someone who has bought a piece of property at Deer Springs has no intention of using the cabins. Only wants the land for future building of a cabin. They shouldn't have to pay, fees. But me, I don't mind one iota paying for a week of, a remote cabin. I don't mind. So that's just me. I don't mind paying up to $50 for the week. If you're going to provide me linens, if you're going to provide, and reservation fees, that's a universal thing.
Let me ask you, of you cabin users specifically, again, first decision, money aside, are we going the right direction to have linens included and feel like, we're protecting the ranch investment of, the stuff, to have some of that? And
I'd like the option.
Yes.
I'd like the option, but, it doesn't...
And they've paid for linens.
Yes.
I like the option, but I don't use the linens because we bring up our own in our sleeping bags. And about dirty mattresses, per se, then if it's just the cleanliness thing, spray the whole... They'll bring a whole can of Lysol, spray it off, and you're good to go, and then put your own sheets down. Because the mattresses don't... You're not saying the mattresses are getting dirty, except for the dog, the one dog thing.
Not with the new mattress pads.
Yeah,
all the beds have mattress pads now. I don't know if the complaints are from before.
When people come in and put sleeping bags, are they putting their sleeping bags right on the mattresses? Are there blankets there?
There's a mattress cover on every mattress. And there's also a blanket and
a bedspread
that you have the option to use or not. A lot of people stick them in the closet, and I mean, the Brock Banks bring an elaborate
bedroom set. I mean,
they bring the
bed.
She does.
Let me see if I can get. I think Ben asked a good question. Okay, we've got four options here, maybe, that we've talked about. And Dave would have me add option zero, no fees. So,
I can.
Option one, no change, just as it is. Okay. Option two, we include the service and we somehow just find a way to kind of eat that service in. We keep the fee. Option three, we increase the fee. What we know would maybe cover half of the cost. And option four, we increase the fee maybe even as much as 55 for the large. So we know that we've covered the whole fee. And I think right now I'd like to at least decide which side of this line are we going to be on. Okay, do we agree that we need to make a change? And so I'm going to ask by show of hands, everybody, not just board members, how many think that we need to make a change, will you please raise your hand? One, two,
one. I'm not, yeah. Number one, I rule out number one because...
Number one is no change.
Right.
I'm not asking you to vote. How many want to make a change? Hands up and keep them up.
Well, I thought you said, if number one, I want to make a change.
Yeah, option one is no change.
Just as it is.
So I'm not voting for that. I'm voting over here.
Raise your hand if you're 2, 3, or 4.
If you're on either 2, 3, or 4, raise your hand.
2, 3, or 4?
Yeah.
I'll raise my legs, too.
All right. So
let's vote on number two.
Okay, we have unanimous support that we want to make Linden's a standard service. Okay? Yeah. Right? So now we're just talking about
what we're gonna
how to deal with
not.
The budget. Okay? That's great. In our decision tree. Okay? So this one is gone. Okay? Agreed?
Yeah.
Could another option be where if you end up in the hole, that it could be put with something else, where like if you were 1,000 ahead on something else and 500 off on this, then you could take 500 from the other one close by to make it all be
budget-wise?
Yeah.
Right. There's going to be enough give and take and ebbs and flow in the budget that I guarantee you any of the options that we choose here will make work. It'll be that towards the end of the year we're really tight and scraping, possibly, and maybe not doing this fence job that we may want to do or whatever. We'll have the option to make this. Any of these options will fit within our budget. They're not deal killers in any way, just like you said. Something else will be a little short. Something else will be a little over. You know, we will manage our budget. So, maybe the next question then to ask is, who feels like that we ought to do this area versus some amount of extra charge? Okay? Right? So we decide we're going to do it. We're just going to kind of absorb it into the budget, knowing that it will probably affect some things, but we'll test it out this year and see where we go versus some kind of a fee. So does that make sense, what I'm asking you to make a decision on right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so no change in dollars. We're going to absorb it into the budget. So who would vote for this option? We just absorb it into the budget somehow, but we provide the service. Okay?
I wish there was a $35 fee for the larger cabins on option two. I know,
yeah,
that's
leave
not
that
an option,
at 25 for the small and 30 for the large.
I'm going to make an option then. Maybe let's simplify this for right now and just say any combination of adding some extra fee, whatever it is over here, versus we're not going to add any extra fee. How's that sound? And maybe it's a small, like Dave said. Maybe we just come in here and say it's only 35, or we got
large
an option 2.5. Okay, is that fair?
Yeah.
So if we decide, we've already decided now, we're going to change the service. Our next question is: decide in any moderate way or any great way, are we going to increase the price or not? Okay?
Yeah, Turk, let me, on Dave's thing. Last year there were 10 people that they charged the up to $20.
Yeah.
I'd rather keep it one price for management purposes and for other things. If we change the dollars and decide on which cabin owes how much money, and we raise an extra $100.
Wow. And it's
confusion.
A complication to manage.
Simplify.
And,
I'd leave it simple.
Don't invent the wheel.
My personal opinion, I would add to that, is that
straight up 35
probably should not have differences, because I know that it will be a management issue, but and also a website development issue.
But it's not when they do Linden's.
But again, that's not any of the discussion right now.
But when they do linen...
Because our only discussion right now is, are we going to change the fees in some way or not at all?
Did we vote for option two?
Right.
Did we all vote
for it? We're voting right now that we're going to change the fees in some way, whatever there is, more ways than I've written up here, 10,000 ways, okay? Or we're not going to change the fees at all, okay?
That's not going to change the fees and they're going to take away the linen fee.
Right.
Yeah, we're, that's what we've done.
Linen's included.
Provide the service as an
employee. So who wants option two, right?
Well, I'm just saying, again, to keep it simple, who wants to provide the service at no charge? Versus, we'll then strategize next what the charge would be if we go down that route. So, how many want to choose option two? Raise your hands and keep them up so I can count them. Okay? One, two, three, four. Okay? And there's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven then. Okay, you got outvoted. Okay? So, now we're over here. We're going to modify the fees in some way. Okay? Okay. So, we didn't get the eraser here, but...
Okay, if we don't want to have large and small, let's do 35, 45, 55. Well, large shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, you're adding three categories instead of going from two to one.
No, she's just saying different range.
Oh, yeah, right.
We've decided we're going to increase. So the next question, okay, we'll take us down, decision tree, okay? The next question is, who thinks that we should have a different fee structure for large cabins and small cabins, or keep it the same? Okay? All right, who thinks that we should have a different fee structure versus the size of the cabin? Vote.
What cabins are the three large? The garden cabin and one and...
Three.
Okay, so one, two, three, four. You guys lose. Okay? Okay, so now we've decided that we're going to have a standard fee. Thank you. We're going to have a standard fee increase of some amount. Okay?
All right.
And Shauna has suggested that we say 35 or 45 or 55. Okay? I think that's what your suggestion was. Maybe you would suggest that there should be a 30.
Nope.
No. We're going to increase it less than these two, $10, right?
Good, let's go like that. That's good.
Dirk, okay. One comment that the other side of the fees. I really wish that you'd send out a newsletter to tell the membership on a very positive note as to how good the board of directors are doing. They did not raise the fees.
We did.
They are going to provide option two. So that the people can, I think you'll get more reservation fees and more people using the cabins and more people enjoying the ranch under option two than you will with the money you'd raise
for $10.
Under three and four and five.
For $10.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what in considering, what I would like
to
see.
So you're saying undo our last vote and take one step.
Well, no, you didn't call for a vote.
Yeah, I did.
Four of us, the other people didn't vote at all.
Okay, let me recall for a vote, okay? Because there's some confusion.
I'm going to say 25, 35, 45, or 55.
Right. No, so we're now not we're back having to... that discussion yet. We're backed up in the decision tree. Okay, the question is, should we charge for this at all? Yes or no?
Well, yeah, you're going to charge $25.
Right, should we change the reservation fee at all? You know, for absorbing.
Just take four votes and raise hands on those four amounts of money.
No, because you got to decide, first of all, you're going to charge for it, yes or no.
Yeah, it's either $25, $35, $45, or $55, Dirk. There's four options right now.
So if we all vote for $25, we're back to where we started.
What you do in that case, you spread your votes across here and guarantee this will win.
That will.
Because,
right now.
You know, there's a lot of.
Oh.
Anonymity of where maybe you would vote over here.
Gotcha.
So the better decision, I've been down these paths, years of training, in how to get these decisions made. Question right now is, should we, Dale feels that we'll make more money next year by sending out and encouraging people to use it, so we'll more than cover the lost revenue by having additional bookings made,
okay.
So it won't be an effect to our budget at all, other than, you know, some management issue. Okay? Right? That's your...
And I think it would sweeten up the membership.
It would sweeten up the membership.
Okay, I'll talk to
okay.
you.
Okay, are there any discussions about that, or should we take a vote on that versus not? Okay, so how many, by show of hands, feel we should provide the service and keep the fee just $25? Raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, you guys win.
How did it go from 4 to 8?
Good move. Well, here's my, let me explain my rationale. Personally, just, well, no, because I, part of it's balancing the budget, but when you start nitpicking over $5 or $10, we've got 200 disgruntled members that if they will come and use the ranch and see I would rather them see some benefit for spending $434 than no benefit because we tried to gouge them $10. And I don't like any, if we're not going to do 25, I vote for $100. I hate this 25, 35. I'll pay $100 to go up there and make enough of a difference to the budget and have some money to do some other improvements and stuff and round it, or, you know, it should be 25 or 50 in my mind. But
can I make a suggestion? And I don't want anybody throwing tomatoes at me, but do the beds have to be made? Do people understand that this is a ranch and not Comfort Inn? And if someone wants to bring their linens, they're going to save the ranch the $20.
Well, that was my question. Are the beds made, or are the linens right
there?
Put the
linen on the counter.
You know, and I understand your point where they're going to come in late, they're tired, they're dirty, they're nasty, they're just going to jump in bed and go to sleep.
But
then they're not the ones that should gripe about how dirty it is.
Right.
If they don't put it on, that saves the ranch however much money.
I think that but then you're still on the same... People, they stopped making the beds for the people because they didn't know if those linens were really clean or not. So this way they know the bed's been stripped. They know those linens are
true.
Clean.
True, and that's a big thing. My wife, she'll look at it, and she does it at hotels. She'll flip the sheet back, and she'll look at it and decide, was it slept in or not?
And if it's folded on the bed, they know it's at least clean.
I don't mind either way because I'm not the one doing it.
I know, but 10 or 15 years ago, it was a major production to get, and I don't know how major, but I remember it is a big job versus pick up the thing at the ranch house and take it up with sheets in it versus getting
it. I know. I actually put them in.
I think it should be right there on the bed, regardless.
But that's a good discussion. So let's make a decision on that.
And
we can put a sign.
Does anybody feel strongly that they should be made versus just put on the bed?
No, they have that ability that way.
If it's made, part of the issue was when the beds were being made, not in addition to it taking somebody a lot of hours to make all the beds. Let's say you go into cabin 3 and all the beds are made. Dave comes in with his family and they sleep in 2 of all the beds.
Yeah.
Then they leave, the beds that aren't slept in still are sitting there for the full week being dusty, flies dying in the window and blowing
spiders
from the breeze onto the bed.
Spiders.
So whether they're used or not, those linens all have to be stripped and all have to be changed. Or you make a judgment call, you go and you say, obviously nobody slept here, you leave it. Well, during that week or the next week, a mouse climbs in it, poops in it, the next person comes and complains, this bed's disgusting, it's got mouse poop in it. That's what happened, and that's why they stopped making the beds and started stacking clean linen. It was just the laziness of some members to say, I'm not even going to bother taking the clean linen and making the bed. I'm just going to climb in and pull up the blanket and go to sleep. So if there was a way to...
Well, I honestly, of the people who show up at the ranch, I think if there's clean linens there, no matter how late, a lot of them will make it. If I got to go to the back to the ranch house, or I get there and think, crap, that is sitting on the back porch of the house. We were going to bring our own. Or I'm at the upper end, I got to drive back to the ranch house and it's dark and come
and
back.
And they may
up,
not make
then
the
I'll
entire bed.
Minute.
They right. might just spread out the flat sheet over the mattress pad.
Right.
Just to get them through the night, and then they'll make the bed
right.
in the morning.
Okay. So I think that.
I think
based on our budget and reducing the thing, stacking it on there, I'm completely comfortable with.
The other issue was we had clean linens that were being taken up and back and stacked on the floor, and so we were spending thousands of dollars cleaning linens that never even made it to the bed to be put on the floor to be slept
that
in with
happens.
The cats and
you know,
the chickens.
People, there's people
so,
that order linens, though.
All right.
And they do that with them. I mean, they'll pull them apart, and you can tell they never hit the bed. They're still in somewhat of a
folded state,
and they're on a shelf somewhere.
Well, do we have unanimous support on this?
Yes.
Okay, I would like to have somebody make a motion.
You want me to finish or revamp my motion?
Yeah. If you'd like to make a motion, Shauna,
okay.
It covers these items.
We are now making a motion that that the fees... Reservation fees remain the same, $25. We will also include, we will throw in the clean linen will be included with that at no charge. The linens will be folded and stacked on the beds. And
no
the people make their own.
No charge. A second at that.
A second.
Motion.
And to follow up with that, good a point from Dale, that letter out to say, hey, here's what the board has done for you. Because otherwise, they're going to think you're wishy-washy from changing it last year to changing back this year. You know, it's going to be like, what are they doing? So, as a favor to you guys, members, whatever,
I would like to word it, and we refer to it as a cabin use. It's not a reservation fee. It's a cabin use fee.
Initiative.
That has been simplified to one flat rate fee of $25, which will include linens, stock. Fresh linen stocked in the cabin.
Good.
Please all in use favor?
Please.
Any who opposed? I voted in favor.
Favor? In favor.
Who seconded it?
I do.
Dave.
Okay. Who's going to write this nice letter?
Linda?
You know what? I vote that Dale should draft it.
Well, I think he can be involved, but I think that Linda or Nancy in handling reservation stuff need to be involved in it.
But I think if you want to kind of take a shot at that, Dale.
Include the ranch staff being, you know, that the linens are going to be clean and fresh.
Yeah, we'll get out. I think the newsletter's a good place for it. Yeah. But I think it's good to say. Hey.
Is it break time? Is this a union shop?
It is right now.
I work for the union, so I can say that.
I know, me too.
Okay.
10-2.
Yeah.
Be sure to include the ranch staff there, Dale.
Well, what I was going to say, Nancy said she was preparing to put out a newsletter
in
January.
Uh-huh. I think we decided January.
Yeah.
We worked together, and I don't know what topic she wants in there, but, yeah, we can help put together a positive newsletter.
The ranch is finally doing something for the membership. Other than having meetings.
And we possibly will have a nice snowmobile party picture to go in there.
Yeah.
There you go.
We'll have our tubing run.
Okay, Shauna.
There you go. That's what we'll have. We'll have Olympics tubing.
AD, second page, top of the list. Any discussion you have on any of those?
No, but we just keep getting more and more good ideas. So we will do pictures of Dave's tubing. I think I took some tubing pictures last week. I'll have to pull them up. But we'll do that.
Okay. Great. Ed, item 9. And I want to mention something, Ed, here before we discuss it a lot. Item 13, I've put in the executive session to discuss some items because I'll just say here in the recording, I would not want, those are in the opposite camp on our legal matters to be able to go onto our website and click on and listen and say, gee, this is how they're all feeling and leaning towards this or that or this decision. And so for that purpose, I would like to hold the bulk of that discussion, or at least anything that would be revealing to our to the opposition, to have as a non-recorded discussion. So I don't know if that leaves anything to have as a recorded discussion now or not.
No, we can wait.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the best interest of the association. So.
Yeah, I think we can say hopefully we're moving forward. The update on LC plans, I don't know that we have anything other than we put the budget item in there.
It wasn't effective until January 1st, so
okay.
We all have some money to
Start working on that. Any other updates there?
Well, you asked me before Thanksgiving to do some research on Title V liability.
Yes.
For us maintaining the road.
Yes.
I have a niece in Washington. She's a lawyer. She's
wow.
She's not in the bar of Utah or anything like that. But she did go ahead and do an hour or two of just reading of what Judge Judy says. And what she did say, in the end, she said two things. She says, number one, if you're going to maintain it like the county. You know, you can't use the same equipment because they probably have superior equipment, but use the same materials, the same grading plan,
yeah,
the same everything. Because if you deviate from that, if you use a different material, then you are putting yourself at risk, abnormal risk.
Yeah, don't do something like they were using gravel and we're using boulders.
That's right.
Or, well, and like you look at some of the stuff that Alan Stevens
we put a new.
We can't use that.
No, that big bank run.
That is.
Yeah. We put a new culvert in that wasn't there before, or something. Change the contour of the road or something.
The second thing she said, she says, you know, whether you're going to be sued or not is not whether you maintain the road. So she said, the real question is, are you covered in liability insurance? That is the major issue. Not whether we are going to get sued, but if we do, are we covered?
Well, yeah.
So,
but that covers both. If we get sued, are we covered? If we maintain the road, and get sued, or if we don't maintain the road and get sued.
That's right. That's what she said.
Yeah.
She said, you know,
either way, we have some liability, most likely.
Deciduous society, you know.
Yeah.
It's bound to happen.
Do you know, Ed? I mean, I haven't looked at our policy at all. Have you ever looked at that
from Summit? No,
you know what it covers. I mean, obviously they seem to be doing a pretty good job with this issue that they're working on right now.
I would know that.
So, does anybody know even where a copy of the policy is?
Yeah, it would be a good idea for us to
I think.
Because there might be some exclusions, he said.
Yeah.
You know, if we go out on somebody else's property, which, you know, that's
right. We ought to at least have a copy of that somewhere. And so can you maybe research that a little bit, Ed, and see if you can get a copy?
Probably give me the contact.
I can give you their contact. The thing is, whether Linda has a copy of the policy or contact them and get it directly from Matt Hunter.
So either Linda or, okay, I'll talk to them.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Matt Hunter, Summit Insurance, Holiday, Utah.
You want to?
Please send me, I don't have a recent, he sent me some emails.
Where's he from, Ben? Where's he?
Matt Hunter and somebody. It's there in South Salt Lake. Holiday, Sandy.
I've got the numbers, the address, and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we ought to kind of, if you could get a copy of that and maybe peruse it.
Matthew Hunter Summit Insurance. Google that and it'll definitely come up.
Item C, the fence and gate on Quarter Horse Road. To my knowledge, that letter has not gone out yet. Does anybody?
It still hasn't gone out.
Well, Brent may know.
Holiday, Utah.
I know.
It's there in South Salt Lake.
It could have gone out. I don't know for sure.
I'm sure if I do a Google search.
Yeah.
So we need to ask Brent after the break about C and D. Any other items, Ed, on legal?
No, that was it. That was the limited liability company, the Title V liability.
Item 10, turn it over to Paul and Nancy.
I ordered the beds and got bed frames from Dale.
Do you have enough for all the beds?
Yeah.
No, I got 16 bed frames. I don't know how many I need to be replaced, but I know there was a lot, so I just got started. We'll do more next year.
Has payment been made out to Dale?
I don't
I'd do more this year because
I
don't know that we'll have the.
I mean, this year I've made 2010.
I'm in
2010. Why are you changing bed frames?
There aren't bed frames.
There's some that are sitting on blocks.
Boxes on the floor or on blocks of rocks or blocks of wood.
Or blocks or, there's...
The legs are broken.
Yeah.
And it's
there's frames with a rock stuck under the leg because there's no leg.
Well,
can I ask a question? Why isn't that just a budget item to go out and buy it? I know it's on the list of wants things, but I...
Well, we did.
I wonder, okay.
That's what they did.
I just
the hotel here just rotated out some, and so we were willing to sell.
But what we need to get at the bottom of it, I agree with Dave, is if we needed 20 and we only bought 16, let's buy 4 more now and let's do them all, you know.
Okay. Well, I don't know exactly how many we need.
Well, there's a lot of good ones.
There's only one rock. Do we need 20 bed frames?
Yeah.
Right. Well,
need more rocks.
Well, I bought
16. You had one rock.
I bought 16, and there's I bought 16 for $50 less than I would have bought 10.
Right. The plan was he had 16 available. That may be 4 or 5 more than we need, but they will store in the barn and stuff and have replacement.
So in theory, we should have enough.
I can think of only 6 that need a frame right now.
Okay, so I'm in concurrence with Dave. Is when something breaks, then in the future let's fix it so we don't get 10 beds that are out of sort again.
Right.
And then this year I'll look at the mattresses better and hopefully we can replace a couple. Like there's a mattress in the garden cabin that ought to be replaced.
Yeah.
It's not horrible. But it's,
a couple in cabin one.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at a lot of this, you look at the cabins, and all I know is when we got there, the place was trashed. The cabins were refrigerators didn't work, water didn't work, hot water didn't, these kinds of things. You know, we're implementing new linen policy, we're fixing the mattresses, trying to fix these things so they're presentable and people can come there and stay and enjoy it and want to come back.
Yeah.
I guess for the past however many years, people have been coming there not very satisfied. So we're trying to change things.
My opinion is that it would be great, and maybe we can get this year after year. I know Dale had statistics for 2003 and that Barbara Button had, but we can certainly see, at least from this report that Linda's generated for the last 2 years, we've seen an increased use, and I think a decrease in the amount of complaints and problems at the same time that we've, significantly increased the number of guests up there. So
hopefully it'll just keep getting better and better. Yeah. The nicer, I don't know, what was it, $10,000 we budgeted for cabin maintenance?
Right.
I mean, that's going to go a long ways.
Yeah, that's a new item.
Yeah.
How many years did we have that?
Yeah.
We should have had that a lot of
years. I think that's great.
I have a question on beds just in general. The frames we got were queen size frames.
I think they're adjustable.
They
may be adjustable.
Yeah.
Up there, we have some queen, we have some double, and some twin. No king.
Right.
Any of the place where there's a double, could we have a queen, or is the room too small?
Some of them, I replaced one of our full size beds with a queen. The mattresses I just bought, I'm replacing a full with a queen. The other bedroom has two fulls, and if you put two queens in there, you probably couldn't
walk between them.
Okay.
And it's kind of a...
Little things like that, too. It would be nice if you made sure the website got updated for the cabin.
But again, you're stocking right on the bed. They don't need to know, but I did, they are... The bedding is still all color-coded, so that it's not...
Right.
Terrible.
And my kids know the color coding. There was, when I got sick last year, Aaliyah was able to tell her dad what to get what to get to put in the cabin, the ones that needed linens, because I couldn't even get up. So, and she knew what to do.
Moving along.
Okay, moving along.
Hey, so you guys know about the water break. It's all fixed.
Yeah, old truck. I'm sorry I left that on there. That was.
I want to mention something about the old truck.
Okay.
We talked about it in the last meeting. It was brought. You know, it was a great idea, but we went home and thought about it. 20 cords of wood is quite a bit.
That's $3,000.
If you take it, $150 a cord or $125 a cord, you're looking at $3,000. Talked to Dee, and Dee works in the summertime. he'd like to do it, but that's just a lot of work.
And he said it's not worth $3,000.
The truck's not worth $3,000.
$3,000 is when you cut it, haul it St. George, and retail it.
If you were to come into town and buy it from somebody here in Kanab,
it's
$150 a cord.
That wasn't the same as harvesting it up.
Right.
One of the canyons at Deer Springs.
Right.
Well,
My question to the board is, would they accept 5 to 10 cords of wood rather than 20 in trade for the Ford pickup?
Yeah,
I don't have a problem.
That was my recommendation. I think when we talked about it, is if 20, you know, isn't fair, you know, to have him in part of the process for him, have him a counter offer. And
well, and something too, just along these lines. We have summer help, and we have a budget for summer help. My boys help me a considerable amount in the summertime.
That's where
it's been going. Right. But, I mean, more than, between the two of them, more than $1,000 the entire summer. So the deal of, say, 5 cords of wood or 7 cords of wood and trade for the truck along with, you know, all the summer help that they help me with throughout the summer.
I think that sounds like a reasonable proposal. Is that combination?
Okay.
I mean, does that sound good to everybody else?
That works for me.
So let's decide.
What was the proposal?
That basically the proposal is that in exchange for his summer help, which I think is probably maybe even more of an issue than the cords of wood, but for his summer help and 5 to 7 cords of wood that he would be given up. I think the combination of those two.
Are you placing wood at each cabin or at a central location to put it in the cabin?
We take them to the cabin only because if we were to load that shed up, you know, the shed up there.
Somebody pulling there.
People just keep taking wood and taking wood. So if they run out of wood or they're getting low on wood, we usually keep an eye on it. We just bring up some wood right out of our shed.
And
I'm not a Ford member, but I was just going to make the suggestion that it'd be easy to keep track of to say, put a cord of wood at each of the cabins, which there's 9 cabins. With not having a cabin 5, we've got 4 upper cabins and basically 4 lower cabins, not counting the garden cabin.
Right.
No, there's 5 lower cabins.
No, there's no stove in 9 or 10.
Well, no wood burning. Okay.
Well, my thing is, if people want wood, and I've told them this, if you want wood, I'll bring you up some wood. And they said, no, we got it. You know, we brought some saws. We'll go down to the slash pile and pick up wood. Just to save my time, to save, you know, that kind of thing. I have no problem.
They'll burn it if they don't have it. Yeah.
You know, if they have it there, they're going to burn it.
All of it, too.
So the motion is to allow him to have the truck for 7 cords of wood plus summer help.
Yeah. Okay, now is it summer help above what he gets paid for?
Yeah, we already have the budget for summer help. And with the projects we have going this year, with more fence, with, you know, working at the headquarters, cleaning, you know, there's going to be more projects for these boys to do.
All right.
Sure, they're good help.
I second Ed's proposal. Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, while we're on that topic, though.
Aye.
I am in favor.
I'm not in favor.
Okay. I'm in favor of having wood available somewhere. I would rather pay for wood and not for linen. You know, when we're talking about this, people need to use linen. We want to encourage that. People waste wood immensely.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the winter, you need wood. Summer, people build stuff. They feed the fire. You go in almost every cabin, and the stove has been overheated. The top's buckled. They don't understand how to use it. I'm happy to say those that enjoy going out with the axe or chainsaw, get your own. If you want wood, it's here available. Add a fee or something. But I either would rather charge for it or make it a little less accessible. I do not want to see Paul spending his time delivering wood. I'd like to make a policy on Paul that it may be either available in a central location or something.
A central
hidden
location.
We have people in the summer, though, that come up in cars and stuff that come up. Well, I guess you could call it your trunk.
I've given people a saw or an axe and said, there's a ton of wood up in the slash pile. You are more than welcome to. only because they said, we don't mind getting wood.
Right.
You know,
they just don't have the tools.
There's been some people I can see would have a hard time cutting wood. I don't mind taking wood to them. But, you know,
and in the summer,
we're looking at a couple months in the summer.
Yeah, but even in those cases, couldn't they get it from their shelves?
Uh-huh.
But you don't need to have a big pile of wood, like in, especially at the upper cabins.
Where you can't place it.
Well, right. Yeah, and we don't monitor it. And they go and they have fires at the cabins that you're not supposed to have.
Right.
And we know that they have them because you go by the next morning and there's the little wisps still coming out. Or, you know, you can tell that, gosh, there wasn't a fire there last week.
I just say it because I don't know how to regulate or what the pause, where to draw the line, but I would much
most
rather...
Most people come and get it from... They'll come down to the, and we tell them it's back there in the shed, you know, just...
I've actually seen somebody last year use a cord of wood in a week. Cord?
Well... Are we in agreement that we shouldn't have freestanding wood stocked to the cabins?
A little bit.
Being a board member, you were trying to clarify 5 to 7 cords. Is that?
Oh, I was just.
Was that your point? Just to be able to measure the cord?
Yeah, I was just going to make it easy for him to say, okay, I've produced one cord for cabin one. This week I'll work on a cord for cabin two, cord for cabin three to say,
here's
what I've done.
If that isn't done, how's he going to know how much 5, 6, 7
cords? Well, we can put
it,
we have
we'll
a place
that
behind
for
people,
our house.
When people come in and check in, they grab a key. If it's cold and it's snowy or if it's, you know, going to be a bad week, they know it. We know it. Hey, do you need
some
more?
They'll measure how many truckloads he brings, whether he delivers it to a cabin or stacks it in the woodshed.
I mean, it's...
He would go over a cord before he would ever short you a cord.
Let's go back to the... Ed, I think you were kind of saying maybe there should be a small amount at the cabin.
Yeah, at least a small
amount.
Or a nice fire, you know.
Yeah.
From people showing... It's nice to be welcome to have a little there, but to have the upper cabin wood box that was there, I'd almost recommend it be disassembled and disappear.
Yeah, it's not even there.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know... But I'm talking... At the gas station is a nice little bundle in Saran wrap that anybody could warm up, and it's welcoming.
Right.
And maybe it's just like a lot of hotels, the first bottle of water is for free.
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing.
It costs you $10 a bottle.
But the next one, you haul yourself and you charge.
When it's cold, we always make sure people have
so a little bit. Do we agree to make that change? And that's not even a written policy anywhere,
so
we just give you that direction. Okay. Sounds good.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I like cutting wood, and I'll cut wood all day long. But it is kind of time-consuming.
Well, that's almost like this fee includes linens and a night's fire. A lot of people only stay for a night or whatever. But the people come for a week and want to build bonfires and stoke it. There's 100 more of those packets at the store to buy for $5 a packet.
You like the linens, bring your own.
But in the wintertime, they need to have, I mean, if you're staying, say, November, when all the upper cabins are closed and everything, if you're staying November through March,
you got to have that every day.
Right.
Then it doesn't cost you for wood. We plan for that. But if you want a fire all summer long,
that's
and
a
have
problem.
Your doors
open, I agree. Have a seat because you're there at cabin. You know, we're only going to talk in cabin 7 or 8 probably, and to keep them fully winter, and stuff. That's a short haul and stuff, but hauling to the north end and stocking everyone.
No, I don't think we ever haul to that end.
Hey, moving along. Now's the time.
Yeah.
You have down here fencing plans. And you've mentioned to me, I mean, I have a couple projects going.
I would suggest that during this downtime, I know you've been thawing out pipes during the downtime, but hopefully in between thawing out pipes, downtime, sometime that we strategize a fence plan. I've mentioned to you what we need to make work for kind of the cattle. And we know we have, like, some fencing up around the fish ponds. And we need to look at some cross-fencing in the meadow, particularly at least one cross-fence to probably prevent cows from going into that upper part of the meadow where it's all just been seeded.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an old fence across there that...
It's
probably
in the wrong place.
It still needs to come down the canyon.
But we need to start getting some maps, and we need to start saying, and I would say as part of your meetings with Ben, to have an organized fence plan. Here's a map. Here's where we're going to build fences. And here's the amount of budget we need to order supplies, or here's the amount of fence posts when our chief fireman is out cutting things that he can round up for us.
Right.
Whatever it is, we need a plan.
Okay. Well, I wrote that on the tracking form, so at least we have.
Okay.
What about finishing that one that only started going from the entrance to the about where that climbing wall is? Either pulling those posts. Or
yeah, there's been a lot of questions with that.
We need a whole plan for the whole yard.
When we start looking at building corrals and
agreed. That's
something should happen. Either pull the posts or finish.
I've wanted to pull the posts, but I've also wanted to just keep the fence going. That'd be a nice another place to raise some animals.
Not a lot of feed.
I haven't done a whole lot at headquarters as far as fence work because there has to be an overall. You know,
we need
I could do 2x4 wire here and then, you know, some railroad ties and some 2x10s. I kind of wanted to keep four.
But,
you know,
but we should include that in this fencing plan. We should work over the next 45 days to say, here's our fencing plan, including rebuilding of corrals in the home yard or...
Right.
Finishing that, you know, there's a lot of things that we haven't done, mostly because we haven't made a decision where we're going to go with them. You know, we're going to do metal pipe, we're going to do cedar fence, we're going to do pallet fence or what. And, you know.
Fine.
Yeah.
And then once we have a schedule, maybe owner participation work project A.
Did our newsletter go out in December? Did anyone
don't know.
Get the newsletter from December?
I
didn't see it.
Because we have owner participation stuff plugs in there. You have to read it when it comes out.
You should check on that, Nancy. I know he was waiting on different newsletters, but I think I was probably the latest to turn things in and still
I saw yours.
Turned it in some time ago.
So maybe it'll be February that the
yeah.
The good membership thing goes out or whatever.
Okay. Any other items on the manager's report?
You have waterline plans and maintenance for cabins. I don't know.
It's kind of the same.
I don't know if the rest of the board has seen this. I just kind of drew up, just kind of off of the old as-built plan, a plan when the water system goes down for repairs, whether we're going to do a bladder or we're going to reline the inside of the tank, there has to be something done with the valves on the lower system. Next to the cabins. Right now, there's no way to shut off cabin 7 or 8 effectively. The reason you want to shut off 7 or 8 is if nobody's using it, we could shut it down, blow the line out, but right now you can't shut it down and blow anything out. And the way the system is, if something happens in cabin 8, you can't shut it down. So all the water from the tank, you can shut off the tank, and you can shut off the valve at the culvert, but there's still all that water that comes down. There's no valves at any hydrant. There's hardly any valves down at the lower system. To be able to isolate the system, if a valve or if a hydrant is leaking or if it's broken, you got to let all that water come down before you can fix it. So to put a valve at every hydrant just makes sense. I've written down kind of a list of how many valves we need, how many stop and wastes, a couple new hydrants. But that's I think, one of the things that we should focus on here coming March, April, and May.
Yeah.
Just kind of a plan. I've gotten with Brent. He's decided that it'd be best if we just go through and dig everything up so that when we do plan to do this, it's right there.
You know, we may... Is there a time that we could do it before we do the bladder or redo the
I think so. I mean,
before the cabins are scheduled, but it's not frozen ground.
It would be perfect right now, because there's no occupancy.
But can you expose the pipe while it's freezing?
Yeah, you can't
now. It's got to be after 8.
It's got to be after freezing, but before we have occupants.
So between April 15th and May 15th,
basically. Yeah.
We have a few occupants.
And even this bladder doesn't have to wait till warm weather, just non-freezing weather, right?
Does the bladder have to be non-freezing just like paint does?
Non-freezing. But no. The paint has to be warm weather days. So we'd have to wait till middle of June-ish to do the paint. But the bladder, as soon as that tanks...
The Titanic ice is gone.
We can be putting that in.
Well, with all that said, I mean, a plan.
Yeah.
Last year, there was a plan to get it fixed. Never got done. I knew about the valve then. It was always said, well, we can't drain the system because we need the water. But if we're going to drain the system to do the tank, let's do it. Let's do it all at once. Let's put in these valves. Let's just do it all.
And if we're planning for it, we need to do without water for X amount of time.
Well, I just don't want to have a big, long time where we've shut down in the middle of our season when we could have done it on the shoulders. And so for that reason, I wouldn't necessarily say do it all at that time because we can shut off that new valve we just put in and drain just from there on down if there's no gas.
Yep.
Pretty easy and in a day or two project clean up a lot of those things.
Is there a decent as-built, or have you and Vance, anybody done any location on the electric line?
We know exactly where it is.
There is there's some drawings in...
I know years ago there was some kind of a discrepancy when we were having Jeff Bond go out and try to locate the line to find a fault. And that's just always concerned me is if we start digging up to replace valves that need to be placed.
We know exactly where the electrical goes.
I can email it to you. I have a copy.
That'd be good.
Before we ever do it again, before we just do any digging, we'll hook up. You know, Vance has shown me how to use the equipment, and I found the water line for when Al and Steve hooked up the
Eckerd's.
Eckerd's water thing, and it's not all that difficult. And then you dig far enough away, and you don't worry. But we've got with Vance and his equipment, we can easily find the electrical lines. They're real easy.
Great. I think I have a machine to do it.
What's that?
I think I have a machine to do it.
Yeah. Well, there's one out there. The ranch has.
Oh, okay.
Vance has got some pretty sophisticated stuff, and he leaves it out there. It's old stuff, but it's completely functional.
Did you say the ranch has one?
Well, it's what Vance brought up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was gonna
say, okay, good.
That's about it. This next week I'm going to be working on some inventory. And there was some question when I first started this job whether I should do inventory with somebody else there. I mean, I can go through and take pictures and document and everything. And I'm sure you guys trust me, but I'd prefer to have somebody else there with me kind of going through what tools are... I have a lot of tools. The ranch doesn't hardly have anything.
I think the main thing is... If I'm up there, you know, on Thursday or reviewing it after you've got it done, the photographs are the thing that's going to be better than my memory or your memory or.
But you're also going to say, didn't the ranch have this?
Yeah.
No, you know, but to have somebody there saying, okay, there isn't that there. You know, there's a question about an anvil, a long time ago. I haven't seen an anvil since I've been there.
I think there's still stacks of stuff though. It disappeared north just
of
before.
I mean, so I'm thinking if Brent has a little bit of time as a board member, if he'd be willing to come down and go through the tools.
That's maybe helpful. And take the pictures while somebody's there and stuff, that'd be good. Okay, anything else in manager's report?
It's cold up there, that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, but it's not as cold as it was in Kanab this morning.
Brent, we had one item we couldn't answer in item 9 above in your absence. To my knowledge, Linda has not actually sent out the letter to Ortolani, but I know that you and I kind of approved the verbiage, but I thought that it would be, you know, typed up and us sign it, and I haven't signed it. I don't know if you have or if...
No, I haven't, yeah.
So I'm guessing that may not have gone out, but I don't know. Or maybe it went out.
I haven't signed anything, so...
So we'll keep that on the agenda. Item 11 probably should have been taken off, but I would like to ask Larry if he could kind of give us a report of the head gate. There were a lot of questions about the head gate and what was put in and what was not put in.
Dirk just questioned me the other day about the amount. There was $2,000 extra additional for the head gate at the Red Reservoir. And evidently there was some confusion.
And just to clarify, that came from we approved $2,000 to get that put in maybe a meeting or two ago. So that's why the number was there. But go ahead.
Well, and there was some question as to whether there was actually a new head gate put in or if I'd just taken the $2,000 and run.
Party.
What I did is I bought a new head gate from Scholson's, and instead of buying a 24-foot head gate, I bought a 2.5-foot head gate. I mean, it's the same head gate, but instead of paying them $2,000, I paid them $600 for the head gate, and then paid Kevin Keyes $500 to weld it to the old angle iron, the standpipe, and everything was there. So basically, there's a new head gate that's this tall, and all the mechanics and working parts of the old head gate stick up. So if you want to go dig through the snow, you can see the bright orange paint down at the bottom. In addition to that, I took the 18-inch head gate that was laying just off, down the silt fence or the silt pond right off along the county road. There's a couple of head gates that have been laying around for years that have been run over by tractors or destroyed that have been just basically discarded and thought they're ruined. I took them and cut them apart and rebuilt them. So there's the brand new head gate just through the fence into Deer Springs Wash, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
I have a duplicate to that now, and those are, probably $1,500, $2,000 head gate for that size. So I've rebuilt another one of those that can go on that lower silt fence, the silt pond, whenever we decide to go ahead and dig through that. And the diversion that cuts water out of the three fish ponds, just above pond number one, there's a small diversion that had a head gate on it. And I assume when they went across there with the tractor to build the fence, when they fenced the meadow, they must have not known it was there in the willows and drove through and mangled it, busted it off, and you may have never even seen it. It's been laying in the rose bushes up in there. I brought that down and cut it all apart and rebuilt it. So my plan was to put it back on. I just ran out of time before the snow, because that should be something that we can close. 2 years ago, when the meadow started thawing real fast, it puts more water through the ponds than they can handle. And so you've got to shut it down and force it to go out around. And when it ran, I don't know if Brent remembers what year it really flooded down through there and started eroding a lot.
No, that was 04, 05. Yeah.
It was not only in jeopardy of ruining the ponds, but the bypass was cut. That's when it cut so deep. And
right.
Now Clark's pushed that into a little pond, and we can control how much do we put through the ponds, how much do we put around the ponds. Manage that a little bit better, but we still need to do a little bit of work. Pond number two, when that flooded like it did, the bypass out of pond two is only 6 inches above the culvert out of pond number two, and it needs to be built up a little bit more, because if you get pretty good flow coming down through there, we could start cutting across that again. Those are things that Ole didn't really even know where any of that stuff was. You guys didn't know where that was when you came on the scene. You've learned and know more now than he did while he was there. And then before him, some of the other managers never even knew where do you take water out or put it in. And just by chance, somebody would go up through there and see that it's causing a problem. But this year, we're going to have a lot of places to watch.
We're getting a handle on stuff.
To know, is it doing okay or not okay? There's the pond, the three fish ponds. Some of you may have not even been up there since, but between, or more or less directly west of pond number two, there's a new pond over there in the big bypass erosion, which is just to help heal up the erosion and to
Who knows, maybe Ben can put some specialty fish over there, some tropical. but there's no way to control an outflow of it. It'll just hold water and start silting that in. So we need to...
Does that water constantly run through there, like along that fence line that I'm building?
Very little. Most of it should go into the fish ponds up high, but it was... The diversion that feeds the fish ponds or the bypass had silted full, so it was just a big marshy bog. And I went ahead and trenched through it to force all of the water into the fish ponds until we close the headgate, and then it'll go over the diversion I created and on around there. I was trying to dry it up so that when Clark was working on it, he wasn't just sinking in out of sight with the cat. But there's small amounts that are generated, just kind of seeps down through there. In fact, we noticed be 20 or 30 feet from fish pond number one out into that meadow going toward where you're building the fence. There's water springing up there that is just it's sinking in 50 yards above, coming up through gopher holes or whatever. And we need to start healing that over. So between me, you, whenever we're in there, if we can dump a load or two of dirt and get that kind of filled in,
that'd be
good. I also put another pond in the southwest corner of the meadow. You know where you were mowing along that little ridge with the rose bushes and stuff at the very bottom end of the meadow?
Yeah.
Over in the corner, that was a bad erosion.
Right.
And I went ahead and built it into a retention pond so it'll start silting it full. But we need to watch it and see. You know, we don't want it to start cutting.
Are we retaining too much, or are we...
Well, what I've done is filled it up to where it'll build up and spread the water back out into the meadow into level ground instead of leaving it down in the bottom of the ditch. So hopefully we're retaining water, spreading it wider to high ground and letting it spread out and do some good instead of having hard, dry, high ground and muddy, marshy, low ground.
Right.
That neither one is doing cows any good or people any good. This is too muddy to play in and hike, and this is too dry and crunchy to enjoy, so we can spread the water and get the high part a little greener and the low part
filled up. I'll tell you, that meadow's going to be pretty impressive this year.
Did we talk at all about any electric fences?
No.
In addition to the north end of the meadow, the upper end.
That should have a permanent fence.
Should have a permanent fence, but maybe even down the side doing some
temporary.
Is this to keep them out of the newly planted stuff?
Yeah, down the west side, just to keep them off that for a year.
For a year, yeah. I think...
But again, for very cheap, we can string some solar electrical...
Well, I don't know if you've ever been where he puts his cows up in Enterprise, but he just has some little fiberglass things and a small little tiny rope that
braided
goes across.
Rope.
And they don't. They're pretty good. I don't know why.
They learn to respect an electric fence.
No, I don't know why I can't keep them from going through that north fence, but.
Yeah, I used to manage my cows with the electric fence a lot, and it got. I would use the thick white stuff, so it was a good visual thing too, and it would get to where you could then just take that out and string it anywhere.
Not even wire it.
Not even hook it up.
Should I look at pricing? Pricing some,
yeah, look
some
at Northern like Hydraulic or Northern
Tool, like with a solar deal.
Yeah, but we want the not wire. It's braided rope, or he's talking about almost
tape.
Nylon tape.
Yeah.
With electric wool through it, but you can get it on a hose
reel.
A hose spool and just crank it in and 1,000 feet at a time.
Even Crosby's has a good supply of those things here in town.
But the price, mainly the thing, we need to get one at IFA or here.
The Chargers, I just ordered one for my farm, and I'd searched several on the internet. Solar one. I got a solar one. And I searched the cables and the clips and the poles and everything, and Crosby's was as cheap as anywhere. For everything but the charger. Yeah.
Well, and something too, I don't know if you guys know about this new farm store.
Yeah.
I wish I would have bought the fence supplies there because you could have saved me about $150 when I bought those posts and wire.
Was it Littles?
No.
Across from Littles.
Yeah.
It's a new one, but it's
canal farm and feed or something.
It's something with the Austin Johnson.
Yeah, it's Johnson.
His family.
It's an extension of the store they have out in the creek.
Yep.
Sure is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brand new store.
But sure is nice that it's there and not St. George.
Well, there's a lot of good
save us a trip.
Stuff there that, you know, we had a horse that had a problem, had to get penicillin shots and stuff, and they have all the syringes and
they have a lot
medications.
Of
and, yeah,
they have, it's good. You buy your Wranglers in there? They're only $16 for kids' Wranglers instead of 20-something in St. George.
Okay, moving right along. Anything else, Larry? Yes, let's look at electric fence. Okay. Other items before we move into executive session. Does anybody dare brave?
Real quick, how many feet estimate? You guess that would be?
2,600.
Okay. That's line of fence.
Not here on the photo.
Okay.
But, and I've gotten to.
I'm just saying, if I price 3,000 feet, that would be enough.
Price it, you don't need to buy it today, but price it.
Right. Well, I'm going to price it. I'm not buying
it. Well, the stuff is almost nothing. The charger is the big.
Yeah.
And you need to get a good. I can't remember what the jewel rating is, but I've had plenty of them that I've bought, maybe seven or eight of them over the years, and some are totally worthless, and right. Others are...
Have you tried Harbor Freight?
Yeah. I buy stuff from Harbor Freight all the time. They're one of my favorite places.
I mean, I got the magazine if you want.
But they got a great website, and that's what I use there. I told Paul to check that on some others, but...
Got a great deal on it.
But you're probably... Probably for one thing, when you see a solar charger that's around $100, you know, that's probably not the one you're going to buy.
Right.
You know, it's going to be more like $350 and up to get one that has a good jewel rating. So, I've had some that you could hold on to with your hand and... Yeah, that's not too bad. I can feel it.
And you don't want to train the cow
well,
wrong.
And they wear they for whatever reason the cheap ones don't last. They might start out good, but
you have to have a tester.
Okay. I'd make a motion that we go into executive session.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.